and welcome to episode 174 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, a place where small press and beyond make one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask from Mars, and joining me this week is my co-host, who's known to many as the Sniper's Dream, it's Tony Esmond.
Hello. We're without him, aren't we? He's not here at the moment.
Yes, we're without Dan Butcher for now, although you might
hear... We hope he's going to make it later.
Yeah, yeah, his lovely, sensual, dulcet tones a bit later in the show.
The boy band he used to be a member of has got back together, and they're doing like a sort of promo video today, yeah. So he's going to be coming back to that afterwards.
He's the lead singer, isn't he? What are they called? Butcher's Row? Wasn't that what they're called? Fan art, please. Fan art. But anyway, that's later. But Dan couldn't be here, but we're very pleased to be joined by an amazing guest. Yes, she is a hugely popular and Eisner-nominated cartoonist and illustrator, whose debut graphic novel, Retrograde Orbit, is a favourite not only of ours, but most of our listeners as well. Yes, it's Christenna Baczynski. Hello, Christenna.
Hello.
Hey.
How professional was that?
Listen to that. Now we even got your name right. That's good.
Smooth.
Don't encourage him. He'll go full Partridge too early.
Oh, dear. Yes. Yes, and for those people, we've talked about... the book, Chris's book, quite a few times, and every time we've mentioned it, we've inadvertently got her first name wrong. But
sorry about that. Yeah,
that's okay. Yeah. One out of two is better than none out of two. So if you said one of my names right, then you're better than most people.
Yeah, hey. I suffered a bit from that as well. I suffered from being called Tony Osmond by a number of people for a while.
Really?
Yeah.
Does anyone call you Donnie?
Maybe.
I'm going to from now on.
Cash in on the Osmond train. Come on, what are you doing? Just invent the law. Collect the tips.
Long lost cousin. Mm. The slightly sort of rougher looking cousin. You know, wrong side of the tracks. Yeah, I like that. Yeah, let's write a comic.
I mean, let's do that. When you step into a room, Tony, I do hear puppy love play in my head.
I've got this sort of weird faux sheepskin coat that I've been wearing recently, and because I've got this like weird handlebar moustache at the moment, I think people think I'm going to some kind of 70s reunion party. And it sort of only occurred to me today when I saw an older lady gave me a double take, as if, oh my God, have I just time travelled back to the 70s and there's this weird bloke walking his corgi in the park?
So you look like a mashup of It's Only Fools and Horses and American Chopper. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both, isn't there? Yeah, yeah. And I don't care. Anyways, I got a moustache.
Sounds like a great look.
Yeah. Yes. So, me and the corgi and me sort of 70s.
Sounds very beige. Sounds nice.
Yeah, a little bit beige. Mm. Yeah, that's my life.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh my word. I've got so much ammunition now.
Right. You can't, because you know you're in it. And we can't say why, because
Let's keep this off the record. Let's not start this. Tit for tat.
Bring the fire.
Yep. In 20 years, there's going to be some, like, shocking tell-alls. But for now...
The revelations of the Awesome Comics Podcast. Yeah, what they were really up to.
Yeah. Yeah, the book will be bought by about 10 people.
Mostly will be bought by me.
Oh, dear. Yes. But you... I tried to turn that in a segue then. I just completely lost it.
Oh, no. You didn't try and make it into a Comic House segue. If you like weird blokes from the 70s who've time travelled and wear weird trousers, then you'd like Comic House. Well, do that way. That's
why,
right.
Why are you wearing weird trousers?
Well, they're sort of tight in the crotch, aren't they, from the 70s? And they sort of flare out. Lionel's, aren't they?
Lionel Blair's, which means flares. For any of our American listeners, that's flares. You never think internationally, do you, Tony?
No, I don't understand it.
Yeah.
No.
But comics is a language that's international. And do you know who has lots of...
No!
Oh, I was going there. It was a golden one, and you ruined it. Yes, basically, we're sponsored by the wonderful Comic House. Yes, they are the indie marketplace with a difference. There is a massive selection of titles on their database. Lots of self-published artists that we know and love have put lots of their books on there. As well as our own Awesome Comics. You can get the hard copies there. You can list your book on their site for free, which is awesome when you're self-publishing and you just want to try and get different avenues to sell your books wherever you can. But they also have an app, which is amazing if you like reading your books digitally, which we have done on this show many times. Yeah. It's like Netflix for comics. It's only £3
a month.
We coined
that, I can't remember.
I'm not sure if we coined it, but we like to take sort of credit for things that we haven't done anyway.
Yeah. Yep, that's true.
only £3 a month, you get access to an enormous library of digital indie comics. Tony, do you know what they've got on there at the moment?
Yes, funny you should ask, I do. This
that's timing.
No, this week. No, yep. This week, Vanguard, issue 14.
Yes, Vanguard. Dan Butcher's Vanguard. Wonderful.
Yeah, very exciting. I love Dynamite, but somewhere there's a horse. It's dead, and someone's flogging it because they've got Army of Darkness, Shop Till You Drop Dead, issue 1. How many Army of Darkness comics are there? It must be loads now.
I'm going to say something that may be controversial for some. Too many.
Yeah, let's say it. Although they just dip in and out, they're quite a good read occasionally. Anxiety Me by Nicole Bates, which is a favourite of mine, actually, from the Lakes podcast. Super nice people. Yeah. They've also just bought a comic of mine. Thank you very much. And Anxiety Me is a really sort of touching comic that I have to say floored me, actually. Really, really nice. So have a look at that one. Grow a Pair by Mark Jackson, which I read today, which is nuts. And Murder.
Hang on, was that a play on words that you just did then?
What's that?
You said Grow a Pair, which is nuts.
Was that
unintentional?
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit.
Oh,
my
genius.
Life's unintentional, though, generally. You know. True. Murder, Volume 1, which is a great book for us vegetarians. Are you a vegetarian, Chris?
I'm one layer deeper. I'm vegan.
Oh, well done you. You're a good person. I'm a vegetarian, but I haven't tackled that side of it yet. But yeah, Murder would be interesting to you because it's. I think the animals take revenge. It's a good little story.
Oh, heck yeah. Mm. Yeah, they're the worst. We deserve it.
Yeah,
we do. We do. Exactly, right. Yeah.
It's going to happen soon.
So there's some good books on Comic House, and at only, was it $3.99 a month or something, Nick?
It is indeed, and you can get a 14-day free trial if you head on over to comichouse.com. And yeah, just discover a lot of these brilliant books that we talk about every week. So there you go. Yeah. It started a bit sloppy, but we got there in the end, didn't we?
What are we talking about now?
The ad, you degenerate. Yes. We're a highbrow show.
No,
the past few. Right, there may be a few crude and rude jokes.
Last week, I made some joke about masturbating in front of Christmas movies, and even I regretted that later.
Oh my God.
Sorry, Chris. Sorry about this.
It's okay. They're kind of soothing in an erotic sort of way. I understand.
Not jingle all the way.
All the way. I hope it's all the way. And now I've descended to your level.
That's normally a record because the guest normally descends to our level at about 45 minutes. So, yeah, now you're one of us. We're so sorry.
Yeah. Pass through.
Anyway, back to comics.
Yes.
Oh, they went well.
Yeah.
One of the better adverts. Thanks for joining in, Chris. That was good.
It's okay. What you say? Oh, I'm on board, you say.
Oh, dear. I knew this was going to be a good show. Yes, but we've been looking forward to having Chris on for quite some time because, Avery Hill have been smashing it with the books they've put out this year.
Yep, of those guys.
Yeah.
Yep.
And one of the ones that I think in a matter of weeks we named about 3 or 4 books, didn't we, Tony?
Yeah, they've got another one coming out, I think, this week, haven't they, I think?
Yeah. Comic Book Slumber Party one.
Yeah, they're really good as well. Mm. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I must be reviewing that one because I really like this. There's a little anthology all about dogs, isn't it, I think?
Yeah, kind of greasy. It's Escape from Bitch Mountain in kind of choose your own adventure style. So it's kind of like fantasy, horror, kind of sci-fi thingy. It's good.
Oh, it's got one of those sort of homage to those sort of books cover as well, like an 80s, you know, with the sort of band across the top of it and stuff like that. It looks great.
Oh, that's amazing. That sounds really
nice. The design's a full lift from like choose your own adventure books. It's amazing.
It looks great. Yeah.
Amazing. Cool. But before that, we, of course, talked about Chris's book, Retrograde Orbit.
Yes.
Which is, I want to say, it's your first sort of graphic novel. You've done you've done comics and mini comics and like zines and things like that, haven't you?
Mm. Yeah, for a long time, really. Kind of 25, 30 pages I've done. I've done so many comics, self-published and anthology stuff as well. But in terms of like titles, I've got too many to fill a kind of 6x3 table at a show now. So that was when like, get your act together and spend a long time making one book instead of lots of short time making lots of books. Because I needed to just make one big thing.
Did it frustrate you a little bit not seeing the end product? Because I know when you do, because I do a lot of like short stories for anthologies and then they come out a couple of months later, but this obviously took a while. I mean, how long did it take you?
I started it in January of this year.
Okay.
And then the deadline for print for Thought Bubble was kind of early, mid August. So right. I thought I had like 8 months of just like cruising, making comics, and kind of, I'm a freelance illustrator as well. So
yeah,
kind of tag team in between work and making comics. So I thought I was going to have a good year. And then another book got commissioned in January. So my first children's book. So I had to kind of cram that in because the deadline for that was it was quicker than Retrograde Orbit. And that was mid May. So I did like a couple months of work on Retrograde Orbit, then stopped and made another book, which isn't out till next year. It's not even announced yet. And then...
Oh, okay. Yeah. I know a lot of these children's book companies, I speak from the sort of experience, have quite a long slate, don't they?
Yeah, so like they project lead time. Yeah, it's like a year, good year, really. 10 months to a year.
Yeah. Yeah, I know Nobra have like a year and a half sometimes. Mm. I think they're sort
it's
of
so anticlimactic.
Yeah, because that's hardcore. The children's quickly on that subject. Children's books is a hardcore cutthroat industry, isn't it? There's big competition out there for books, isn't there?
Yeah, it's got to be dead hush hush. They're like, oh, we don't want anybody else to any other publishers to swoop in and kind of do a similar sort of book. So I can't really talk about it until the publicity properly starts. And so yeah, that's all done. But yeah, that kind of came in, and I had to like smash it into my schedule, which was already kind of at max, and then it turned into a horrific gauntlet of a year of just making all the time, which was great. Like, I made more stuff than I ever thought I could make, but yeah, so I did that till mid-May, end of June, and then picked up Retrograde Orbit again for another 2.5 months. So it took me 4.5 months all in to make the whole book.
So not bad.
When you picked it back up again, how many pages did you have left to do?
It's 108 pages, and I'd done the first 8 pages. So I pretty much like made the comic.
Was that playing on your mind? Was it? There's a few sort of, oh my God, better get on with this kind of nights. Was
I
it?
Sweat a lot this year, but I made like a lot of comics. Yeah, I kind of worked backwards from the deadline. So, like the kids' book is a 60-page book, and I did that in like 2 and a bit months, and this is like 108, I think it came in at, for Retrograde Orbit, and did that in like 4.5 months. But comics are just like so much more labor intensive than anything else.
You can never tell from the. I mean, there's a lot of panels on these pages. Some of them, you know, you're working sort of 6-7 panels on some of the pages. You know.
Yeah, it's heavy dose of like fully illustrated, and everything's designed as well. In terms, because it's sci-fi, so everything's like, I'm doing all the costume design, character design, world design. Yeah. Buildings and kind of scenery and stuff, and the technology as well. Like, so it was a big ask, but
a definite look to it, isn't it? It really has an individual look to it. You know, is that how did that come about?
I just really love kind of sci-fi, and I had a few ideas for books, but chatting to Ricky at Avery Hill, who we kind of started making moves on. Well, I signed the contracts just over a year ago, so last summer. And then I was working on other books last year, which meant I was busy till Christmas. And then it wasn't until January that I could start it. But I'd kind of had a couple books cooking, just ideas, kind of rough ideas. And I've done a bit of sci-fi before, and usually post-apocalyptic stuff, because I love that apocalypse. And I don't know why.
Well, surely you don't love the apocalypse. It's what comes afterwards.
Yeah.
Or maybe just stories about it.
Yeah.
It's such a fruity kind of time. I don't know. It gives me so many ideas. I really like it.
It kind of wipes the slate clean, doesn't it, as well? You can sort of kind of create from the beginning with a post-apocalyptic thing. You can say, like, you can have one page of, yeah, the world ended. Yeah. And then you can just get on with what you like, can't you? You don't have to worry about what the bus stop looks like or something like that, you know. So,
The dissolving of rules and kind of norms is like, it's intoxicating when it comes to storytelling. I love it. I had a couple ideas for stuff, and then Ricky was like, I was thinking sci-fi. because I think he was a fan of my work already and was kind of into those stories, so I wanted me to run with that stuff. And then that I had one story that was kind of sci-fi driven, which turned out to be Retrograde Orbit. And yeah, I guess like I just really like kind of I like drawing anthropomorphic characters, right. So that kind of lends itself to alien worlds. But like with this one in particular, in terms of like being from different places or the kind of locations, like you can maximize the effect of that in the narrative with it being across the solar system rather than across a continent, perhaps. So that was a way to kind of have a narrative mechanic that was like emphasized as well. So
I kind of rated it's interesting. That.
It's a very personal story. For those that may be listening that don't actually know what the basic plot is, what is Retrograde Orbit about?
It's the story of a young girl who we meet when she's a child called Flint, and she is a second generation immigrant. So she lives with her mother and her maternal grandmother. They all live on this mining colony, and you kind of follow her through the story as she grows up, and you see her kind of negotiate these feelings of like growing up in a home that a family have built versus longing to be and explore the family that the home that her family had to escape, which is on the other side of the solar system. And it's just about her kind of negotiating those feelings and then deciding whether to leave her family to kind of explore her heritage or stay with her family to build her home, and kind of being torn between those two things.
It does a brilliant sort of line of sci-fi, which I think is some of the strongest, and certainly brings up some of the storylines that you get in some Star Trek episodes. I know we were talking a little bit about Star Trek before, but it's sci-fi in its scope, but it's very personal and about characters rather than you know all of these different planets, which are interesting. You know, it's fascinating. I love seeing these creation of worlds. But you know, this you could almost take this sort of storyline and put it in different sort of genres in some ways, isn't it? If you break it down to its core, it's you know, that's one of the things that I loved about it and didn't expect it to be about, because I thought, what sort of sci-fi story is this going to be? And then I was like, hang on, this is deeply sort of personal. This story is, you know, it hit me in ways that I didn't expect.
When we spoke, Chris, at Leeds, I asked you about this, and I think that leads directly on from what Vince is saying. Is there, to me, it's a story about an immigrant family, you know, and learning to live in the most obvious and the most subtle way, an alien country. They are essentially illegal aliens, aren't they? Almost, you know.
Yeah. So that kind of acclimatizing, and it's also about being like from a single parent family and working class kind of background as well. But definitely that kind of like it's about displaced people and kind of being out of sync and kind of othered by the world or the people that you grow up around, and I think they're quite universal themes. There's always something that kind of sets you apart or kind of makes you feel like you belong, and they're quite kind of strange feelings. So I kind of wanted to explore those stuff that I felt that I kind of like realized, and they kind of solidified the more distant I became. So the more of an adult I became, I could kind of like figure out, oh, that was why I was such a weird kid.
Okay.
why that was difficult. So like that's a real motivator to kind of make a story about. But also like there's Ukrainians, which my family are Ukrainians. In Huddersfield, or there's kind of Doman aliens on a mining colony across the other side of the...
And for those from America, Huddersfield is slap bang in the middle of what used to be sort of the mining country, isn't it? You know, in Yorkshire.
Interesting. Like definitely kind of post-industrial kind of northern town.
And this I actually did some reading on the internets. And I learned some knowledge. And when I looked up Retrograde Orbit, I do not know if this is a factor, but I thought it was quite interesting with the Ukraine to Huddersfield sort of thing. So for those who don't know, get ready for knowledge is power, people.
Here we go.
A retrograde orbit is an orbit where the satellite travels in an east to west direction instead of the common west to east orbit. The normal west to east orbits are known as prograde orbits. Retrograde orbits are uncommon due to the much higher velocities necessary for successful launch and the associated higher costs. Look at that.
Was that conscious?
Yeah. So it's kind of slightly metaphorical,
Of course, yeah.
Like title. Yeah. But yeah, so that's kind of satellites viewed from Earth. So if you were going to see a satellite in orbit and it was in retrograde, it would look like it was traveling a different way across the sky. But you also have retrograde and prograde orbits in a solar system where planets either go clockwise or anti-clockwise. Okay. So retrograde is the kind of the opposite to the norm. So it's that kind of idea of resisting or kind of having to stand up for something that you're being told to do or something that's expected of you. So that idea of growing up and there's pressure on you or expectations for you to do a certain thing or be a certain kind of person or have a certain type of job or be in a certain place to kind of rebel against that. See, and kind of resist that.
I love that.
Kind of metaphorical take.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. Because the name intrigued me anyway. But, you know, because I've read it and then I looked up the name, it completely clicks. I love it when sort of book titles do that. There's more to a book title than just being something cool, which is normally what my stories are. There's nothing deep and meaningful to anything that I do.
It was going to be called Super Cool Radical Comics. But
that was already taken.
Yeah. Skateboard kickflip comics.
Is that going to be the next book?
Yeah.
Of course. So, obviously,
in those past 5 minutes, we've dropped some serious knowledge on our listeners that they do not expect from this show. Are you quite a space? You're a fan of like space and the galaxies and everything. Is this something you've always had a passion for?
Yeah, like I really like astrophysics. So I like kind of Neil deGrasse Tyson and Carl Sagan and Cosmos as a series, and read Cosmos by Sagan as well. So quite like thinking about kind of like theoretical physics and our place in the galaxy. It's just an existential. I love that existential feeling of like when, oh God, I'm so small. Oh God, Earth is so small. Oh God, our galaxy is so small. So I like that feeling, and I like kind of making my stupid animal brain hurt because I like have a thirst for knowledge. So I love it, that in terms of like actual like science. I was also going to be a biochemist before I dropped out of college and started doing art school a year later.
Quite a change, mate. That's people at university will probably see that as two sides of the coin there, I think, wouldn't they?
Yeah. But that's a big part of why I like kind of really technical drawing, and also like I'm into like the printmaking and kind of like technical crafting of like artwork as a file and technology that goes into it. And I think that's the science side of stuff kind of playing a role as well. But yeah, I also like sci-fi as science fiction, so I like reading sci-fi. I'm slowly reading all of Ursula K. Le Guin's back catalogue, so I love that stuff. And I watch a lot of Star Trek.
Well, I knew we'd get there, but I think before we came on, I just said, oh, the costume on the cover looks a bit like a Star Trek uniform, and then we realised that we were going to bond in a minute over our love of Star Trek. So, for those that haven't seen the cover, it's almost got the sort of piping, the neck piping, and the sort of jerking effect, hasn't it? Really, on it. I know she's sort of slightly anthropomorphic, but your main character Flint. But there's a touch of the what are the blue aliens in Star Trek?
Andorian.
Andorian. Yeah, there's a little bit of the Andorian about her, isn't there?
Yeah, a little antenna, kind of blue skin.
Okay. So what's your trek then? I'm going to say, I don't know where to go.
We've all got a trek, haven't we?
Yeah. Are you TOS or are you?
No, TNG onwards, really. I watched the original series like twice through, but I did it kind of as an adult. It used to be on Sundays when I was growing up. So I used to watch it on a Sunday afternoon. and like rated it just because it was kind of sleepy, cool sci-fi and colourful and
strange.
Weird.
Yeah, it was definitely strange at the time. Mm. I remember some of it actually quite frightening me as a kid and thinking this is just out of the ordinary and straight. I mean, everyone just sees it as this sort of straight adventure story, but it has its moments, doesn't it? Mm. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, there's definitely kind of moments where there's kind of silly stuff. But then there's episodes where you're just like, damn, that is so well written, or that's such a good idea. Or like all good sci-fi, you just think it kind of took on quite like radical socio-political themes.
Which is what you've done as well, isn't it? You know.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. So I always kind of rate that about sci-fi. But probably TNG. I watched a lot of TNG when I was growing up, and I watched a lot of Voyager. Voyager was coming out when I was growing up. And then I never liked DS9 because I thought it was boring and brown. it was the most like...
Season three, when it's a Klingon War, that's when it takes
off. Oh, hell yeah. The Dominion War, it like kicks off.
Oh, so good.
And it's like Ronald D. Moore pre-Battlestar Galactica. And he's just like planning out this epic like galactic war.
I actually think we wouldn't have that if it wasn't for Babylon 5. I think they looked at what Babylon 5 were doing and they thought, right, story arc time. Right, we're going to go large. Mm-hmm. You know? And I think it takes off.
DS9, I could watch that from beginning to the end, like just all day long, just put on repeat. Just love it.
If I turn it on and he's got his head shaved, Mr. Sisko, I think, right, this is going to be a good episode. I think pre-head shave, it was a little bit touchy-feely, and then he just goes full on, right, now we're at war, let's bring it, you know?
Yeah, the goatee is a mark of when it kicks off, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. And then Worf, you're just waiting for Worf to arrive.
Game changer. On.
But then when Dax dies and that weird lounge singer, what's his name?
Oh, yeah.
obsessed with that holiday.
They keep going and seeking him out for telling him their problems. Yeah, poor old Odo. Yeah.
Oh. But I ship Odo and Lwaxana Troi so hard.
I would definitely go out for a night out with Odo. I remember jumping a queue once at some Star Trek event and just walked up to him and started talking to him. And you know, one of those things where just you think you know someone and you just talk to them, and he's just looking at me like, who the fuck is this weird bloke with 1970s Star Trek talking to me? And I warmed him up a bit. It was all right at the end of it, but I was thinking, he's staring at me weirdly.
I can't believe you jumped a queue.
I know, I didn't realise I had. I just sort of walked. Oh, he's on his own at that table. And I walked over and he went.
You didn't spot the massive queue.
And after about 5 minutes of talking to him and he'd warmed up, he said, I hate to tell you this, but I think you should have been in that queue. I was a little bit mortified, but we just carried on anyway. Yeah. It's quite nice.
Yeah, I think they're all quite nice. I don't think there's any mean people in Star Trek, really.
No, not really.
Or is there? I don't know. Oh, no, there might be some bad uns.
I don't think you can afford to be if you want to make that extra money from the convention circuits.
That's true. You've got to be in a good egg.
Yeah.
We all bought that album.
Which album, sorry?
Old Yellow Eyes is back. The Data. Brent Spiner did an album, didn't he?
What?
He fancied himself as a bit of a lounge singer as well. It's called Old Yellow Eyes is Back, as in Old Blue Eyes is Back. Yeah.
Oh my god, I had no idea.
Don't you get yellow eyes when you've got some sort of problem?
Yeah, smoke with the liver, I think.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, Vince suffers from gout for many years.
Oh no! Old red elbows.
How did you know my nickname at school?
I like the way you don't even deny that, because just everyone will know that I just made that up.
I don't see the point in denying it, because everyone knows you're full of shit.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, but the Common is actually a really good song. I'd just like to put that out there. Really like that song.
Yeah. Who else has had a music career? Spock did that weird Lord of the Rings song.
Baggins.
Old Leonard.
There must be. I think doesn't Benjamin Sisko fancy himself as a bit of a sort of blues guy? If you watch that series,
the captains on it's intolerable.
Yeah, it is.
They're trying to out jazz each other. They're doing like Shatner and Sisko. They're like trying to out jazz each other, and the conversation is indecipherable.
It's painful.
Yeah, it is a must watch for any Trek fans out there. Yeah,
I've got that on DVD.
Anyway, back to your book.
Okay.
Anyway, yeah. There is that Star Trek influence. That's fair to say. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm looking at the cover now, and the sort of the mining colony thing on the left hand of the screen is straight out of a TOS series for me. Sorry, mate.
Oh.
With the little domes. Yeah, it looks amazing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. In terms of design and stuff, probably like Valerian and Lorelei comics was probably like maybe where I was into it a lot. Because that's one of my like favorite in terms of design, kind of favorite sci-fi comics.
Nice. Oh, okay. Did you read them in English first, or did you read them in, was it French? I suppose, was it? Or...
No, I've only read them since Cinebooks, I think, because the publisher has done all the translations. So yeah, so it and only recently as well. Like, in recently in terms of like how old the comics are, but I think I was like opposite the Cinebook stall at a few festivals,
cool.
all in the same year. So I was just like buying a new.
They do like a 3-for-2 deal, don't they? Quite a lot of time. Yeah, it's really good.
Really good deal.
Yeah, mm. yeah, we're very fond of them. Yeah.
Yeah. If ever like the show was quiet, I'd just buy some and read some comics.
And they come across as a little bit kitschy retro as well. People think they're just going to be hard sci-fi, but they're actually sort of quite Euro cool. Because I mean, they're from donkey's years ago, aren't they?
First books,
you know.
Yeah, and like I know when they did the Valerian, like. When the film was coming out, they obviously put together that nice sort of hardcover of the first few books, and like the first 20 pages of it, they talk about, you know, how influential it was, because most people over here don't know, they haven't really heard of it. I mean, they probably think, oh, it's that terrible sci-fi film or that sci-fi film they liked, which I thought was all right, a bit long, but but there is pages where they talk about, well, here's what it looked like it like before Star Wars, and here's, you know, you see it puts it like next to Star Wars designs, and you see how much they were influenced by Valerian.
Yes,
which is something that people, you know, they see Star Wars designs and think that's where it started.
Yeah, because it's so iconic. It's like you just the automatic association, but no, they're great. I didn't know there was a big collected edition. I will have to seek it out.
Yes,
yeah, it's like an oversized hardback, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's sort of album sized. Yeah. You know,
and it is the first few volumes, which of course are very different from where it gets to, because I know it really hits its stride. I know when Jerome from Cinebook was on the show, he sort of said around volume 6 or 9 is when it becomes the brilliant series that it is then. I don't know how many volumes they've done of it. It's so many, isn't it?
They're still coming out. I actually find it, because I like dated. I'm not saying dated in a bad way. I actually think the first few volumes, if you're a new reader, you have to prepare yourself for it being a little, because there's a lot of panels. There's a lot of work on each page. It's not like modern comics. You know, there's a lot packed in. There's almost a story on each page, isn't there? You know?
Yeah, there's some of the text bubbles are like a quarter of a page.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, dude, chop it up. This dialogue is just like copy pasted. Come on,
it's science fiction.
Back then, they'd have actually had to paste it onto the page. Yeah, that's the thing, I suppose. A lot of glue going on there.
So, is science fiction like after your experience with this book? Is it something you go back to in the future to do another comic book?
Yeah, definitely. Like sci-fi, fantasy, post-apocalyptic stuff. I'm always kind of interested in, just in terms of like. It gives you a bit of liberty to craft a kind of mechanism to the narrative or something. Mm-hmm. Like Retrograde Orbit is driven by the movement of the planets in the solar system. So the chapters kind of are vignetted kind of moments. So you get a day or two out of this person's life every 3 years, because every 3 years the planets align and she can see her home planet in the sky.
That was a really nice touch.
Yeah,
Chris. I really like that touch. I really like the way we lived with her through her life in your book, and all the mistakes she made, and you know everything. And yeah, that was my favourite bit of it. I think when it jumped the first time, I went, oh, okay.
Yeah.
She's in bed with a man who looks a bit like a dog. Like a dog. I'm like, I like where this is going. It's, you know.
But you really sort of follow the character. It's like a coming of age story with the ups and downs, isn't it? You know, you have that bright-eyed enthusiasm, and then the inevitable mistakes of the teen years and the early 20s, etc.
Yeah, there's a lot of naivety in the character as well, isn't there, from time to time, you know.
So by the end,
she's definitely kind of flawed and makes mistakes, and kind of you sympathize with different characters each chapter as well. So I wanted those relationships to kind of grow and be slightly complex or kind of imperfect.
Yeah. But I think it's good that, you know, even though she has those imperfections, you never lose the character. I think that's quite important, isn't it? Because like you want to follow your hero through their ups and downs. Mm. Whereas if you make them too, that's the problem I have with some, I don't know, some books, some TV series, some novels. It gets to a point where you're like, I just don't like this main character anymore.
Yeah, I get that all the time. I'm just like, oh, you're too good. Stop being great at everything.
Yeah. I said this week in an interview. I prefer a flawed character. Mm. The hero's got to be flawed to remain interesting, you know.
Mm. Or have an interesting perspective or some take on the kind of scenario that you put in. And I think if, like, I try to write all the characters so that everybody has a point. So when she's kind of going head-to-head with her mother, like, they've both got a point. Mm. They've both got a perspective, and they're both
that was a great legitimate dynamic. Mm. Really nice. So,
like, I think I always like that in stories where, like, people are motivated not just because they're a kind of cookie cutter villain or a cookie cutter protagonist, that you can kind of have conflict come from. It's totally Star Trek thing. It's total Gene Roddenberry thing. Now that I'm saying it out loud, I'm like, duh. But you get that kind of drama unfolding because people are kind of earnest and trying their best, and they just have different perspectives, and I think that's really kind of like I wanted that because I like those characters, and I didn't want anybody to be a villain, so there isn't necessarily kind of a bad character. There's kind of lousy people, but not kind of like heroes and villains in terms of like those like archetypes, I suppose.
Yeah, that old sort of cigar, moustache twirling baddies who are just baddies, aren't they? You know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's essentially a biography, is it not? Is it? It's a biography of a person.
It's someone's life. Yeah. A lot of people have been like, "Oh, is it autobiography?" But
that was my next question. Now, is there much of you in her, or is it? Did you reflect yourself a little bit in what she does, or?
Yeah, I think so. Well, I think some writing comes from like real feelings or things that I really find. So there's always something of the author about, like about the author in the work, I suppose. But but then there's things that I wanted it to be about in the very early start, kind of early drafts of the script, which weren't even a script really. Just when I was writing, like I wanted it to be about these things. So I have an interest in this story because I'm a second generation immigrant, so I wanted it to be kind of about like some of that stuff and to kind of negotiate some of those things. But that's a kind of starting point, so it extrapolates into something that isn't me and isn't my life, but is kind of peppered with things that I really feel or kind of feel strongly about. So there's an intimacy to the story that everyone's like, oh, this is just like you recast with pointy ears and antenna.
If only, she said. If only I had pointy ears. Yeah, I know what you mean.
If only, come on.
Because it's a human story, isn't it? You know, despite everyone being aliens. And that's what everyone can read into it. One thing, obviously, I mean, as you can tell from like the question we've asked here, like, there's so much thought that's gone into this book, and I'm sure you're planning it for some time. But I want to know about the colour tones that changed throughout the book. What was the reasoning for the sort of way the tones changed throughout?
It's almost seasonal, isn't it?
Well, I have always worked in kind of duotone previously, in terms of like that kind of like sciencey tech interest that I have in kind of making comics and art, is definitely kind of goes through into printing. I have my own risograph printer to kind of, so I have a small press in my studio, but like I've always kind of, my brain's hardwired when I'm like coloring comics to work with a limited color palette, so I kind of picked the color palette for the front cover, so I did the front cover before any of the pages, and that was that kind of blue and purple and like a red, and then kind of shades of those. So I came to color in chapter one after I'd done the inks and the line work on chapter one, and kind of just colored and recolored page one for a couple of days, which is a vast amount of time. I can kind of color a big chunk of comics in a day, so I was just like, man, it's just not right and I can't do it, and then I wanted color to be a kind of narrative influence, which I've done in previous comics anyway, and I just kind of had that palette in front of me, and then I thought, oh, I wonder if I do like a kind of red shift from have one planet, one colour, And then as the narrative develops and she gets closer to her home planet, if that home planet is kind of color-coded another color, then maybe we have this gradient as it kind of moves through the shades. So it is a direct gradient from the kind of teal blue into a navy blue, into a purple, into a maroon, into a red. So there's a continuous kind of color thread running through. And once I'd kind of decided that I could kind of have seven increments of like a main color through the whole book, one for each chapter, then I could kind of do a duotone for each chapter with kind of black, white, and then shades of whichever the chapter color was. And then the color kind of developed as the story developed, and also as the journey kind of expanded and kind of changed from one planet to the other. Originally, I was going to do it just a slight spoiler if you've not read it. I'll say that now. Give me 30 seconds and you can come back in. There's a in chapter 6 she does make that journey, so that chapter I'd put in my notes like on this one do a color shift as she moves from planet to planet, and then it was that idea when I was kind of struggling with the coloring and looking at all the different colors, I was like, oh, do that through the whole comic. So that was when I was like, okay, that's a good idea.
I mean, to me, I don't, and I won't spoil it, but there's a big splash page towards the end where you use the colours to illustrate the journey she's been in the air. And that absolutely floored me, mate. That was just a perfection ending for me.
Oh, thanks.
I absolutely loved that. I mean, the thing is, we were tweeting it. We were texting each other as we were reading this. And it's an outstanding achievement, mate, I've got to tell you. But it does come across as alien. I think the thing for me is it is a completely alien environment. And, you know, all the relatives are, and her friends are sort of these weird one-eyed creatures and all this sort of thing. But it is extremely personal at the same time. And when she takes that trip in the last chapter, and I was like almost cheering, thinking she's done it. Look, she's finally done it. She's overcome all these years of messing about and being a bit of a mess as a teenager and, you know, sleeping around and, you know, this sort of thing. And finally she sort of stepped out. She steps out onto an alien planet and you think, oh, my God, this is so good. You know, this is, yeah, really, really good.
Oh, thank you. But
wasn't
really
a question, just a bit of a gut feeling.
Thank you. I'll take it. there's a lot about it that I'm really proud of. It's really nice hearing people confirm it like that. So thank you. I'm glad you felt it. I was worried when I was kind of writing it and doing, because I wanted to do a lot with a comic, which I historically have done with my mini comics and kind of shorter one shots as well. Try and do like span a lot of time or long distance or kind of big events, but then kind of keep it small to try and keep the reader involved or kind of connected to it enough, but it's a risk, like
it's just a confidence thing. I mean, you completely carry it off, I'm sure, now that you've done it.
It looks effortless now it's out there, but I was like agonizing over it. Like, oh man, is this enough? Like, should it be smaller, should it be less years that you kind of skip and stuff? But yeah, so I'm glad it was okay.
And when you think about 100 pages in a couple of months, Jesus.
Yeah, that is good going. Yeah, it's good going.
My hand's still on. My eyes haven't fallen out.
Do you work digitally?
For this I had to because I was going to ink it all. Like, all my previous comics I've inked. So I use a light box. So thumbnail everything, write the story, thumbnail everything, character designs and stuff. And then hand-drawn pencils, hand-drawn inks, then scan it and do digital color. But for this, I knew I was going to be up against it for time. So I bought an iPad Pro, an Apple Pencil, and just I drew it all in Procreate. So I did my I did my thumbnails and writing and character sketches, all my kind of quick drawing I did by hand. But then as soon as it was full-size pencils, I moved on to the iPad Pro and did that in Procreate, and then did a full pass of the book in pencils and then full pass of the book in inks, as digital inks. And then I went back onto my desktop. So I use an Intuos Wacom. So not a Cintiq. You don't kind of draw on a screen. You just have a stylus and use that with Photoshop to do the color. So I did the colors on my desktop computer, and that was it. So yeah, this is like my first fully digital comic, but I did ink there's one page of inks which is the cover, which was before the end times happened when that other book got commissioned. There's one page of inks which Ricky Bagsied. He was like, oh, they're the only Retrograde Orbit inks. Can I buy them, please? I was like, yes.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah,
it's always a good sign when your publisher wants to buy an original page.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Let's face it. Yeah.
Has anyone asked for like prints of like certain panels or pages?
I mean, oh, they're instance, crying out for it, aren't they?
I mean, the last page would be a spectacular print.
Well, I hadn't thought of it, but yeah, like I did some at the launch in Leeds, Travelling Man on sort of a weekend. I did some prints of process, so my inks next to my colours, and had them kind of up around the venue. But I've not kind of done any kind of large scale prints of it.
You did a little book plate as well, didn't you, which I've got in front
of
me.
Yeah, I've done three book plates. So,
really? Oh, okay.
One for Travelling Man, one for Avery Hill, and one for Gosh Comics in London.
Oh, cool.
Quite a few. But that was nice because I just got to draw like fan art for my own book at the end of it. I was like, yay.
Yeah. No stress. Yeah, it's better, isn't it?
Just a one shot, just draw something cool. And also there weren't any like colour rules or something. So some of them are far out. They're just kind of the character floating in space on an asteroid, or kind of the head popping up out of like a city floating in space or whatever. So it's all just like a nice hot bath of a drawing compared to doing a comic.
I mean, obviously you're working on this quite a long time and especially with the children's book. But for a story like this, how long had it been in your head? When did this whole story come to you?
When I started writing it in January, like I had a few seeds of stuff cooking, but hadn't really started writing it properly. So it's not something that I'd been like dying to make a comic about. It's kind of a story that I had to kind of force myself to sit down and like write a comic that you would think would be cool.
Did you write full script for yourself?
I don't really know what a comic script is supposed to look like.
None of us do.
It's whatever works best for you.
Yeah. There's that whole thing of like, what's your process like? Well, there's no the process, like the way you should make comics or whatever. So I think like the way I write feels a little bit like that.
You know what I mean? I'm kind of glad that we don't have that.
Yeah.
Because it allows a bit of creativity, doesn't it? You know?
Yeah, and kind of figuring it out. But it also, like, if you have any kind of ounce of imposter syndrome when you're making stuff, it's a real breeding ground for that. It's like, I'm not doing it right. This is why it's taking so long. Maybe if I had that one program, it would solve all my problems. But it doesn't work like that either. But yeah, so I think, it was kind of, I knew I wanted to do a sci-fi comic, and I knew I wanted to do a comic about kind of the second generation experience, because I felt like I was old enough to do that, or at a point in my life where I was like, this is something that I'm feeling, or something that has kind of about my past has a new context now that I'm older and I can look back at it.
I think that's quite important with work as well. I think to know when is the right time for you to do it. I mean, obviously, if people can create comics left, right, and centre, you know, all these fun ones. But I'm sure we've all got these particular projects that we're thinking that, you know, we put aside and sort of say, not yet. I don't think I'm in the right place, or you know,
exactly.
Yeah.
So
it's a really interesting question that I think is about what experience do you have in your life that allows you to write something, and it's all different experiences, aren't there? You know.
Yeah, totally. So there was, I think I knew that experience maybe for a while longer than like Retrograde Orbit existed in my head. Like I probably knew that I wanted to make a story about that, maybe that kind of amorphous feeling for a longer time. In fact, I got interviewed again this year for somebody who'd interviewed me in 2015. And they asked me about making a graphic novel then. And it was weird reading back my answers to that question, because they seemed so like directly linked to Retrograde Orbit, and I was like, I had no idea what I was talking about then, but like my weird subconscious was like, make a book, make this book. So I kind of read it back and I was like, oh god, you can just read that answer and it sounds exactly like I'd been writing this thing for three years
when go with it. Just go with it.
I wrote it in like 4 weeks or something. I think in terms of actually crafting the story and figuring out the characters and the structure of the book, like practically writing it, I hadn't done any. It didn't exist as Retrograde Orbit till January this year, really.
Okay, yeah.
Wow.
So have you ever collaborated with anyone? Excuse me for asking, but have you ever just done the art or done the writing for someone else?
Not really. I've always kind of been writer artist. I was the first artist in residence at Thought Bubble in 2012, I think it was.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, and they did it for a few years. Tom Humberstone was for the following year. But right. they had a writer as well. So do you remember Paper Science? It was like a kind of small press anthology around like 2012, 13, 14.
But it was the writer. It, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it was one of the editors that Julia Sheila was on it, and I think Tom Humberstone was involved. It was the same era as Solipsistic Pop. So it was one of the editors from that, and we wrote a story together, and then I was the artist. So that's the kind of, and we did that for Thought Bubble anthology for that year. So that was a kind of the most collaborative thing I've probably done, other than like Nelson, which. From Blank Slate, which was 2012 as well. Hot year.
Okay.
But that
seems
was
like yesterday. Is it that long ago? Wow. Okay.
Yeah, I think it is. Well, 2012, maybe 2013. It's a good 5 years, I think.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, to be fair, in the sort of I refer to it sarcastically as the gosh comic scene, but there's a number of scenes, the small press and indie, and I think in that sort of world, being a writer artist is more common than elsewhere in comics. You know.
Yeah.
Is it something you were drawn to? Because, like you say, it does make you suffer a little bit from imposter syndrome and uncertainty when you're not working with. I mean, I couldn't draw a fig if I tried. Do you know what I mean? So I don't have to put up with it. But it does kind of sort of sit you on your own a little bit, doesn't it? And creating comics in a bubble sometimes. Is that something that you find that would you like to experiment and maybe try writing with someone else for that reason, or drawing for someone else for that reason, or?
Yeah, for anything with comics, really. Like, I'm at the stage where I'm like, that's what doing Retrograde Orbit was about. It was like, you've done small press stuff for so long, and I could just churn out 24 page comics, like 30 page comics, and print them. And I'm like a full publishing industry in my studio. And I've kind of streamlined it to the point where I was making comics and I was like, oh, that's another comic. I wasn't like super hyped about it or excited. Or I was like, this is life changing. And for the amount of work that I put into them in terms of like, how much drawing, like my drawing is pretty labor intensive, it's very detailed, so it's not like I can just kind of knock them out whatever. So I kind of, that's why I was hungry to do Retrograde Orbit. I was like, right, let's level up, let's do something exciting. I think collaboration is just like another thing to try, really. I'm not sure what that would manifest as, but
there's about 400 people opening their browsers as we speak. I've got to tell you, listen to the show. So expect some emails. But I know you mean this sort of because you got a lot of attention, rightly so, and we loved it for Retrograde Orbit, didn't you? So it's almost like a next step up for you. Is that the way you see it, or like the next progress in your career?
Yeah, I wanted it to level up my career, really. So I've always had like part time jobs to supplement. Being an illustrator and cartoonist and making comics and stuff. So we used to work in a print workshop like 2 days a week. And up until early last year, I was a university lecturer like 2 days a week as well. So it wasn't until the start of last summer that I quit and went full time freelance illustrator and comics. So that was when I was like, right, let's smash it and make some crazy books and just do some stuff that I'd not kind of been brave enough or like... had the time, really. There was always a reason to do something smaller, I think, because I'd compartmentalize my week where I'd be like, oh, I'll be kind of lecturing Monday, Tuesday, so I need to do a project that can fit into a Wednesday to Friday or Saturday slot, and kind of small press stuff is perfect for that, because I can be like, well, I'll do like 4 weeks work and I'll have a comic at the end of it, and then I'll have this show and I can smash it out, and then I'll be back to lecturing and it'll be fine. So it wasn't until I had this like unending stretch of time out in front of me, which was like full-time comics, that I was just an illustration that I was like, right, fit something big into this big amount of time. So that was kind of a mental and circumstantial shift where I had more resources to put into making comics.
You sound quite regimented, mate. There was no like break, oh, I think I'll watch Loose Women for a half hour. You're pretty sort of regimented, and would that be a good description? You know when work is, and you know what you got to do. Is it? You almost set a timetable out from the sound things.
I could send you a picture of my Retrograde Orbit timetable. It's 11 weeks budgeted, 6 days a week working on Retrograde Orbit. The seventh day was for fun or making diary comics for my Patreon.
Of course, because you've got a Patreon to think about as well, haven't you? That's another.
Which I launched this year as well when making all of the yeah, when all the books from the Hellmouth were coming upon me, I was like, oh, my goodness.
No wonder you like post-apocalyptic comics.
Yeah. That's what your world has been for 2018. Yeah. But so what is your standard day then, doing this full-time, you know?
It kind of changes. When I was working on Retrograde Orbit, it was easy. Like, I didn't have to think about anything else. It was like meditative because it was so the same thing every day. So I wake up, glass of water, cup of coffee, sit down, do, if I was penciling, I'd do try and do 2 or 3 pages before lunch, and then 2 or 3 pages after lunch. If I was inking, like page and a half before lunch, page and a half after lunch. And then if I didn't do that in a day, I'd pick it up in an evening with an iPad Pro, could sit on the sofa and draw. And then colouring, I just smash out, like, I do like 6 or 7 pages full colour per day. So that was my like routine of that's my quota. I need to do that to stay on track for this deadline, which is easy. It's just like clocking in and clocking out. Even though it's a vast amount of work and it's grueling and physical and like it's a lot of work. But I knew exactly what I had to do. But then like flip to freelance stuff. I'm at the behest of my inbox, really. So now I'm back to being a freelance illustrator. One day I was working for Twitter, and then the next day I'm working for Etsy, and then I'm doing my online shop, and then, you know, so it's a bit more kind of grab and dash, and I'm shifting gears a lot more. So that's in stark contrast to working on Retrograde Orbit and comics, really. So it's weird because this has been my routine for so long, which I was really comfortable in, just like short projects that I can pick up, answer an email, do the work, make amends, write an invoice, send it off, it's done, do the next thing. And I was so comfortable doing that before, when I had like a part-time job or when I was like chopping and changing through my weeks. And now I've just done like long-term, like long, massive project after massive project. And now I'm coming back to that a year later and I'm just like, what? This is absolute chaos. So it feels really weird. Like I've got used to the rigor, and that sweet isolation of just being like, I've made a kind of surfacing and like being like, oh man, that folder of pages has just got like twice as big in the past week, and I can like look at stuff, especially with Retrograde Orbit. On a Monday, my favorite thing was opening my like Dropbox folder that I shared with Avery with all my pages in, just being like, when did I draw that? Like transcendental comics. It was
amazing. Is strange, isn't it? I look back at stuff I've written and think, who on earth wrote that?
Yeah.
All the time.
Do you ever have, sometimes when you look back at something you've written or drawn, and at the time when you're working on it, you just think, this is awful. This is unreadable. And then give it a month and you read it back and you go, actually, that's not bad.
Yeah, I give myself more credit with a bit of distance. Yeah, there's definitely a cut off. Like some comics are dog shit. Those early ones, like I'm just like, no, but like especially with my Patreon, I do like comic reruns for like rare and out of print things or stuff that was in weird anthologies. So I've been like going through my old hard drives and picking like 1 or 2 pages up that I'd completely forgotten about, and like chuckling to myself or being like, man, this is so good. That's such a good idea, or like, who made this? Like, it's great. So it's been nice kind of revisiting stuff and like chatting a bit about them and then having people comment or like stuff, and kind of sharing it within that safe space on Patreon as well. Which has been fun. But like, yeah, there's definitely some that are just like, sidestep that. And there's hits and misses, but there's a lot of hits. I'm like, hey, this is cool. Well done.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I had a period in the sort of mid-90s of writing comics because I really hated celebrity culture. So I wrote a lot of comics about just painfully killing famous people. And I dug out some of those comics the other day and thought, what on earth was I on then? I was like, talk about angry youth. Do you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, I know what you mean. Sometimes we look at stuff and think, Christ almighty.
Yeah. And I think some stuff dates in a way that you don't expect. Like if it's about current affairs or kind of like of its time in some way, there's ways that something can be of its time which at the time you make it you're not aware of, and then like put 5 or 10 years on it you think, Oh, that's so, like...
Yes, especially prevalent these days. I think people have got to be careful about putting bloody Snapchat in every comic they write or something like that, you know, because people are going to go, oh, Christ, that's so 2018, you know, when they look back and their brains are plugged into their computers or in 5 years' time, you know.
The laser vision. Oh, yeah. Why is this damn paper?
So what's I mean, I know you're sort of leveling up. What is your sort of, what would you like to do next? What's the sort of thing that you're now, you, because you're obviously a person, a creator with a plan, Chris, I've got to tell you. You sound eminently sensible compared to us. We just sort of muck about and swim about in our own muck, you know. But
speak for yourself.
What's the sort of next step up that you'd like to take, you think?
I'm not sure in terms of comics, really. Like, I'm chatting with a publisher about doing a book, which I can't talk about, which would be, I don't think it would be as big as Retrograde Orbit, but certainly another book with another publisher, which is great. So kind of seeing where that comes in. Oh, the fireworks have started here. I'm sorry if that's getting noisy.
That's all right.
And then
that
I guess...
just Vince. He lets off around about this time.
Pardon?
Squeaky guts.
It's that pot noodle. It's gone through me like a bullet train.
As they want to do. But yeah, in terms of comics, like, I do want to do something bigger than Retrograde Orbit, because I'd kind of got so comfortable making small press stuff and kind of short one-shot comics that graphic novel had kind of almost been mysticized in terms of
easy.
Yeah. It's like, oh, it's so big. It's like, it's massive. Oh, are you there? Are you still there?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Okay.
He was just drinking a pot of noodles. He disappeared for a minute.
Oh, it makes perfect sense now. but yeah, now that I hadn't got the notion that I didn't quite know if I was capable of it in terms of making a graphic novel. So I had to really commit to it and just be like, right, sign that contract, make it happen, set that date, and that will, like, be the catalyst for it happening. And it was, and it exists now. But now I'm in this new uncharted territory of being like, oh, okay, you made that thing that you didn't think you could make. What's the next thing that you don't know you can make? So I'd obviously want to work on something bigger. But in terms of genre, whether I want to stay with sci-fi or go kind of more fantasy, I'm not sure. But yeah, it's weird. Like, I'm kind of taking, because it was so physically and, like, in terms of, like, commitment and time and stuff, I kind of didn't have a social life for a year. People were like, where have you been? And I was like, I've just been making a comic. making a big-ass comic. And so, yeah, I've kind of, like, given myself a bit of time to just become a person again. I tried to do, like, a year's worth of socialising in a month or so. So I did Star Trek VR at Trafford Centre. It was awesome.
Look at you. Bloody
hell. Hot shot. we didn't die. It was great. But yeah, I'm kind of not sure with comics, because I feel really inexperienced, even though, like, these are, like, things, these are achievements, kind of racking up and, like, get nominations and, like, get published and all this stuff. But it still feels a little bit like uncharted territory, like, and whether, like self-publishing, I could just, like, think of something and make something, but in terms of approaching a publisher and pitching and doing treatments and stuff, like, I guess that's the next step in terms of conjuring a bigger book and more ambitious. So I'll be looking at that.
You say more ambitious, but, you know, Retrograde is already quite an ambitious project anyway, to make that step to go into a fully fledged original graphic novel is quite a big step. And certainly there's so many people out there that are like, right, I want to do my own graphic novel, not realizing how much work it takes. Or, you know, a lot of people talk a good game before announcing anything. So what, you know, for those people who think, oh, I've got an idea for a graphic novel, I'm going to announce it to the world, or, you know, I'm going to start working on it now. What advice would you have for people about to take, their first steps on the journey of making a graphic novel?
I guess make it about something that you're excited about, because it has to kind of sustain, if you're a writer artist especially, you have to kind of sustain yourself and your enthusiasm and commitment to the project for a kind of fairly long amount of time. You know, some people can do it in a few months, some people it takes a year, so that's like a decent chunk of your like existence on a planet and like day-to-day life that it's going to consume. So you want to be working on something that you're excited about. So I think that has always been like a the R, like the what's that steering thing, the rudder, for me.
the stirring thing, you know, it stirs the boats.
As it goes down that lovely soup river. But yeah, I think having like a strong direction or something to kind of like keep you on course is really good. So something that you're passionate about or excited about, that's kind of always been my compass when it comes to like making work. And then practically in terms of doing it, I guess like I always find having a deadline of some sorts, whether that's like working with a publisher and they have a set print deadline, or whether you want it for an event or something, and then kind of work backwards from that. So like Retrograde Orbit is the length that it is because it's what I thought I could make between kind of January and August. And it's like the size it is because that's the size my publisher said. So some concerns are like out of your control, some aren't. I think it's I unless I have those technical things down, I can't quite start a project really. When I'd had kind of page count and kind of page sizes and like time in terms of length of time that I could work on it, that was when I started being able to slot things in. But then again, I'm very kind of technically minded, so I don't know if that kind of works for everybody or not. But then I guess like in terms of writing, like I said, I feel really kind of inexperienced with writing.
Tony's okay? Exploded on the other side, on the other end.
Oh my gosh.
Are you still with us, Tony? Sound like you were putting on a pair of metallic trousers for a second there.
Oh, can you hear me all right now?
Yeah.
Oh, that's all right. Yeah, good. I don't want to have them now. I think I got a bad connection. I think that was me.
Did you move to the other shed? Is that what you've done?
Yeah, I'm in the other shed now. Yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
As long as you're safe, that's all we care about, darling. That's all we care about.
Went for a pot noodle.
Yeah. What was your earning?
Look, we're not getting paid by them, so let's stop mentioning them.
Not poodle.
And not poodle. There's a print.
Yeah.
So obviously, like since Retrograde's come out, obviously you've just been inundated with people like buying it, and it's been a massive success for you, hasn't it?
Yeah, the signing was really busy in Leeds, wasn't it? It was like, really good.
It was kind of wild. I think we pretty much sold all but kind of 5 or 6 copies in Leeds that weekend. It was ridiculous.
Oh, wow. Nice.
So in terms of like the boxes that Travelling Man got, the boxes that I'd bought from Avery, and like the ones that Avery had brought for Thought Bubble, there was just...
Yeah.
They kind of all disappeared, which is kind of wild.
That's good news, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. There was a long queue. That was the busiest party that night I went to. I went to, I think, 3 parties that night, and the Travelling Man one was mobbed out, really was, wasn't it?
Oh, that's great. I had no concept of, like, time or space. I just sat behind that table. I was like, what's your name? How do you spell it? Okay, I'll draw this for you. There you go. Go over there. It was just like, and I just did that from like 7 till 10. And they were like, okay, it's 10 o'clock, go home.
That's the exhibitor experience though, isn't it? Just having no idea like what time it is, whether you've eaten, what's going on.
Yeah.
My mum brought some sushi there from the Japanese restaurant around the corner. So there you go.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Good cool. at it.
Living large.
Yeah. So Kat Chapman was next to me and between signings, I was like, please talk to anybody while I just like shove this avocado sushi in my mouth. And then don't let anybody engage with me in conversation for about 20 seconds. Otherwise, there's just going to be like rice balls falling everywhere.
I knew you were a class act, Chris, when you said avocado sushi there. I knew we had the right people on the show for a change.
Yeah. So obviously Retrograde Orbit has been a massive success, but It's constantly available to everyone, not just conventions. Do you have any conventions coming up for the rest of the year?
I've got some shows, but not kind of comics conventions. I've got like some zine fairs in Leeds, and then kind of like crafty things up north. So there's one at the Hepworth in Wakefield, and then a couple of zine fairs in Leeds, and then like an Etsy fair.
Sorry to interrupt. Is the Hepworth the big? Have they got a big sculpture exhibition on the moment at the Hepworth?
Yeah, it's a massive sculpture gallery. It's like a purpose-built, like it's the most amazing, like brutalist, gorgeous building on the canal in like Kirkgate area of Wakefield. It's lovely.
Oh, I know really well there. Yeah, yeah. Okay,
It's really nice. So it's well worth. Like, it's, I applied a couple of years ago and didn't get in, but I applied again this year, and they were like, "Come." So again,
slightly incongruous, having been to Wakefield and been out for a drink at night in Wakefield, to find that it's actually sort of cultured city now.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they had a bit of money from somewhere and they scrubbed the streets and built a nice thing.
It's sort of now on the dance floor for a bit of fighting. It was always that sort of place, you know. But
classic West Yorkshire, yeah.
I love when you get off the training Wakefield, you're just presented by like a huge, like really bleak looking prison in front of you. Christ, where have I just arrived at? But yeah, I was really, funny enough, they were talking about it on Frontline the other night. I was listening to that podcast and they were talking about there's a big new exhibition there. So yeah, I thought, well, I'm up to quite a lot of fancy visiting that. But they have zine fairs as well. How cool are they?
Yeah, it's like a kind of makers fair. So there's all sorts. My friend, a few printmaker friends are doing a show there and doing the same one. So, but there's ceramicists, printmakers, all kinds of people. And then I'm there kind of slugging comics and prints and stuff. So I think it'll be good.
When does that take place?
That's November 24th and 25th.
Awesome.
At the Hepworth Gallery. And then I think the most recent one, there's the Girl Gang Zine Fair in Leeds on November the 18th, I think, Sunday. So that's in a couple of weeks today in Leeds. And then I'm doing York Zine Fair at the start of December. And then there's an Etsy like Makers Fair at the start of December in Leeds as well.
Wow.
So that's my schedule for the year.
And we will put all of those in the show notes.
Oh, amazing. Thank you.
Yeah. So be sure to check those out and just go there.
You must have had a few, now that you're an Eisner nominated creator, have you had any sort of thoughts about maybe doing some European or some more American or Canadian, that sort of thing?
Yeah. Well, I did TCAF in 2015.
Yeah, I thought you had done. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was my first like non-UK show. And then like I did Glasgow Comic Con 2016. I wanted to do it this year. Oh no, maybe 2017.
It's just come out. I think it's just come out.
I missed the applications last year and couldn't go because I was working on Retrograde Orbit this summer. So this time last year, I was just like the worst.
I think Mr. Prolix, Nick Prolix, who I do a comic with in our anthology, he's going to it. I think I found
it's good. It's a really good show. I loved it. Like I really.
Is it Nicola who runs it? I think. Is it Nicola Love? I'm going to say that's her name. She's a friend of our friend, isn't she?
I think I've got emails from somebody called Nicola and they were super nice.
Yeah, really nice. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So I definitely want to do Glasgow again. And then I've never done an MCM because it looks heckin' terrifying.
Get yourself ready for that one.
Yeah. So again, it's that thing of like the overly hyped thing of like doing the graphic novel. I was like, oh, can I do it? I feel the same way about MCM. So I've managed to like go almost a decade making comics and self-publishing and not have done an MCM.
I think we're bonding over our pain around that because I think I'm doing it for No Brow in May. And I'm not overly looking forward to it.
It looks full on. Like,
Christ, and,
like the biggest thing I've gone to is like Thought Bubble, really. Like TCAF isn't even, it's probably on par, but it's on the same building. Like it's not even that massive.
As I hear, it's like third biggest in the world. It's 133.
Oh my God.
People. I went about 4 years ago, no, 3 years ago when we first started the show, I think, wasn't it, Vince? Mm-hmm. And I had what's referred to as a breakdown because I stood there chatting to Andy Clift and I turned around and there's a bloke who looked a bit like me. I'm quite a hirsute male. I've got to be honest with you, Chris.
Hirsute? Did you say hirsute?
Hirsute. And he was dressed as Alice in Wonderland and you could just see the tip of his balls. Do you know what I mean? And he was eating I don't know why this made me feel worse. He was eating an egg mayonnaise sandwich.
Oh, right, God.
I thought he was just going to say a boiled egg. And yeah. I was like, oh, God. Oh, God.
It's almost too far, isn't it, if you said that?
It was all in his beard. And I said, I was standing there chatting to Andy Cliff, and I said, Andy, I can't stand it anymore. I'm going to go, mate. This is doing my Swedish. And I ran off.
Sink beneath the table very slowly.
Yeah. And Randy just going to me, yeah, fair enough.
It does get to you a bit.
Yeah. Well, nothing against people dressing up as Alice in Wonderland, but, I mean, have a bit of shaving going on somewhere or other. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like that. Like, the scariest Joker is by far the Cesar Romero Joker, like Adam West Batman, because he's got the facial hair and it's, like, caked with thick makeup. It's so, like... degenerate.
So I think you got the sense that Cesar Romero went, I've made my career on that moustache. You're not shaving that off. And then somebody's gone, how are we going to get around this?
Yeah. He was still starring in like soap opera, like drama, like a 5 days a week, like telenovela thing, while doing Adam West Batman. And they didn't think it'd take off, so he didn't bother shaving his moustache off because he needed it for the other show. So they just painted it with like clown makeup. It's just made for the scariest thing in the world. But yeah. Oh, God.
God. Bloody hell.
Yeah, stubble and face paint. It's like, ooh.
Yeah. There's something strange about that, isn't there? It's like eating an apple after you brush your teeth. There's something wrong and I don't know why. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I once drank Vimto after I'd brushed my teeth. That's awful. Why? Tastes like sick. It's awful.
Another one that people from London will relate to is eating a burger on the tube. That's like, there's almost going to be a law against that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Sit next to somebody who's
eating. Yeah. Yeah,
oh,
there you go.
Anyway, if you see Christina at any of these shows, be sure to go up, say hello, and don't be dressed like Alice in Wonderland.
You can if you want. I'm not actually that fussed, it's fine.
Yeah. And, just don't eat an egg.
Cesar Romero joke is great, so can we
do it? Oh, if that actually happened, that would just make my year.
Yeah. I'll send you a picture. Bound to.
We need a tin of paint to paint over my moustache. I've got to tell you at the moment.
Dulux.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Anyway, hope you enjoyed that chat about one of our favourite books of the year. Obviously, Chris is going to stay with us for the rest of the show. But we've got before we all give you lovely people some recommendations to head off into the wild with, we've got a couple of shout-outs, don't we, Tony?
We have, mate. Yeah.
Do you want to go first?
Do you want to go first? Because mine's going to lead into something, isn't it?
It is indeed, yes. I just want to give a quick shout out to, obviously for those who know this show, know that I live in Bath, and a classic sort of comic creator.
You don't you live in a field. We all know you live on a farm somewhere.
I live under a bridge, get it right. It caught up in my own world, never really aware of the creators around me, but recently there's going to be a get-together of lots of brilliant artists and illustrators from around the sort of Bath area, and this week met up with a couple of them, and that was Rachel Lee Carter of the brilliant Nicolas Cage comic.
That's how I could say oh, we're in a Nicolas Cage comic, because it's so good, isn't it?
Yeah. And we'll talk about that more in depth on a future show, I think. Andy Richmond and Sam Schaefer. Just want to give a shout out to them, because it was cracking sort of meeting up with them over a pint of sherbet and just putting the world to rights. So and there's going to be even more creators for the next one, so it's quite nice. I always get jealous of the people.
I'll come down and stay at your house now that me and Joe have got over our little problem.
You're best friends now, aren't you?
I did keep coming over to your table ignoring you and going, all right, best friend.
What did she say?
Fuck off.
No, just the record, she never said that.
No, she never said it. Please don't kill me.
Yeah. Yes. So that's my one. So, big shout out to those people. But, Tony, we've got something a bit extra for our lovely listeners this week, haven't we?
We have. Yeah. We've, myself and the mighty Andy Hanks, have launched a Kickstarter along with Fair Spark Books, who you probably know because we've had Aaron Rackley on before, are part of the Little Heroes universe.
Yeah.
And we've started a Kickstarter. So here is a little interview that we did. Just a short one. Don't go crazy. But a short interview. We don't know, actually, because we haven't recorded it yet, because that's the sort of time.
Look,
I don't understand what's going on.
You could never be in the magic circle. Terrible.
Oh. Anyway, I don't know what's happening, but here's an interview with Andy Hanks that we did in the future.
Right. So this is going to be interesting. because one of the normal hosts is on the other side of the table.
Yes, even yes. It.
And Dan Butcher is
the Butcher is here.
The Butcher is here. Yes.
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah.
He couldn't be with us for the regular show, but he's joined us for this special interview, extra interview. I mean, this is going to be quite an epic show.
It
all
is.
In. Yeah.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
We're tagged in for the last bit.
Yeah.
Or the first bit, and when you cut it in.
Yeah. So much editing for me to do. It's unreal. But me and Dan are talking to obviously Tony.
Yes.
But also the amazing Andy Hanks is with us. Say hello, Andy.
Yeah, so Hanks is in the house.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Hello, Andy.
Yeah, good, thank you. How is everyone?
Good.
We are all the better for speaking to you.
Of course.
Andy's obviously, he's no stranger to podcasts, being one of the nerds that haunted themselves, am I correct?
Yeah. No, but I am a stranger to being on the podcast and people being nice to me, so you're going to have to bear with me on that one.
Yeah. Just the bickering that goes on in your podcast. Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's weird calling you Andy, because normally I just refer to you as my artist. I don't use the name anymore, do I? Yeah.
And you're my writer.
Yeah. And what's it we call Aaron? We call our publisher.
He's our publisher. Yeah.
And what are they talking about, listeners? Well, would you believe it? There's an amazing project on the horizon, and I think it's one that's very close to a lot of our hearts, because obviously we make comics, and we want lots of other people to make comics as well, but also like the next generation, young kids that you see at all these shows, they want to make comics as well, and they want to have fun doing it. Those great how-to books that we always used to see when we were kids, now there's an extra special new one on the block, and that is how to make comics with Springworth.
Yes.
Now,
dum.
it is an absolutely brilliant idea from the guys at Fair Spark Books, who are just obviously they've got the Little Heroes Association, which is amazing. But Fair Spark are putting out some amazing sort of books that are literally for all ages as well.
They're putting out loads of books.
Yeah.
It's like it's like a conveyor belt over there. I mean, it's like they've been at least three or four since last time I saw Aaron, I think.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. Right. Yeah, since the Troops thing. Yeah. We've had a couple of Amos books. We've had Megatomic Rabbit. We've had all sorts of things, haven't we? Yeah.
It seems to be Amos books like every week at the moment.
Yeah. It does.
So good. Gallant and Amos is a cracking book. That's
fantastic.
It's
good to get more kids' comics out there.
Yeah.
It is. Especially sort of UK small press stuff. It's great.
Yeah.
And of course, funny you should say that.
Yeah, funny you should say that. Because How to Make Comics with Springworth is a proper sort of how-to sort of guide in some ways for kids. And it's written by Tony Esmond.
Yes.
And with art by Andy Hanks.
Hello.
And so we decided for this fun little chat, this little extra, this soupçon of awesome that you're going to get this week, Tony's on the other side and he's going to be asked questions by me and the triumphant returning Dan Butcher. Yeah. Who's recovering from a cold. So thank you for joining us, Dan.
That's no problem.
Yeah.
I do every week. It's not a massive chore.
You try editing it, mate. Don't we?
That is a massive chore.
But no, like, to start us off then, for those people that are unaware of it, there's a Kickstarter currently going at the moment for the campaign. But what is How to Make Comics with Springworth?
Shall I do this?
Go on, Andy, you can do this one. You wrote
so it's part comic and part activity book. I think I'm going to call it that. It's not like showing you how to make comics. There's a few books that have come out recently, but it's Springworth, and he's a robot butler. We went through a number of different names, didn't we? Because we had
did.
One, and it turned out that there was a film character turning up soon with that name, so we changed from that one. But Springworth is like a mustachioed Alfred Pennyworth
style. Kind of a C-3PO-y kind of character, isn't he, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's sort of helpful, but sort of slightly butler-esque. And sort of aloof and cheerful and helpful, and he works for a superhero who has a couple of sidekicks, and they have an adventure, and in the middle of it there's sort of, we've left sort of little blank spaces and instructions from Springworth, where Springworth gets the kids and he says, look, we need help,
and he gets the kids to draw monsters for him and robots and costumes and stuff like that. So it's not just a comic. It's a, like a little activity thing that kids can do.
I was thinking about this here, but I'll tell you what it reminds me of. Do you remember back in the day when you used to get the Beano and in the summer they used to bring out the summer special?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
It's a bit like that, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it would be like a continuing story and then the readers are asked to jump in and illustrate a panel.
Yes.
Oh, nice.
Pretty
one.
Much.
Yeah, it's a funny one because it's a balancing act because we're obviously getting them to illustrate stuff that then appears later on.
Ah, okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. That was a real tricky bit.
It was, wasn't it? So we've done a bit. They illustrate a robot that is basically a robot that punches things, which is kind of our bit of our sideline. We like things getting punched.
Yeah.
And we know kids like to punch things. So we sort of went with that. And the robot, they create the robot, which then we've managed to sort of shroud in a sort of in the wind as it's racing through the air so that we know. Do you know what I mean? It's weird because you have to draw, the kids have drawn it and then we can't recreate what the kids drawn because we won't have known. But it's a strange sort of balancing act. You almost have to work backwards off stuff to figure out what's done. And Andy's come up with a couple of very genius ways of getting around it towards the end as well, which I won't give out. But
I mean, there's another bit. I mean, one of the first pages, not too much information, is you're looking at designing their costumes, which is always tricky because they're going to appear later on in the comic. So how can you, there was a challenge of, still having the characters appear, but we don't know what the costumes look like. So, so we basically, it was, I think it was down to one balloon saying, why don't you just colour in all the costumes? Which actually saved me quite a bit of time because I just had to leave them blank all the way through the book.
Yeah. That's a nice touch.
Yeah.
Want to colour in the backgrounds.
yeah. Let's not even mention the bloody backgrounds.
I have to say, wait till you see Andy's art. If we go to the Kickstarter page, fucking outstanding. And I'm sure we'll talk to Andy about this being his first ever comic, but we're all blown away by it. But the bits that are comics work perfectly well as comics, and they've all got.
Thank you.
Andy's done like little sort of Easter eggs in there, which I'm sure he'll talk about in a minute. But so that's kind of the plan, and it's done through Little Heroes, so it's. Our idea was that you can go on the Kickstarter, you can buy your own copy, but if you just for a, I think it's £6, the £6 level gets you a copy, but it also gets the copy donated to a kid in hospital, which is kind of where we wanted to go with this.
Yeah.
So it's, we can drop, if we get enough money and we're 58% at the moment on the Kickstarter. So we're doing all right. We're not perfect.
Doing good.
We're
doing all
right. Yeah. We can get some copies of comics and it's just for print costs, isn't it, Andy? Is that right?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah.
So we're just really asking nice of you guys.
Yeah, so we're asking print costs, and then that'll go into the hospitals for the kids if you for that. Only £6, that's pretty good.
That's nothing.
Yeah. You get a digital and a physical, and then you get a physical dropped off at hospital. Sort of
plus,
thing.
It's a 24 page sort of A4 book, isn't it? It is an all ages magazine, as it says on the Kickstarter.
Yeah, magazine size.
Yeah, it is A4, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, so that's going to be brilliant for kids. So how did this idea sort of actually come to be? Who decided, I want to do a How to Make Comics, or was it Fair Spark that stepped forward first?
It was Aaron who came. I'm not sure if they were Fair Spark at the time. Were they just Little Heroes? I can't remember now.
I don't think they were Fair Spark. I think that came on a little bit later.
Yeah.
I
think you're right, mate. Yeah. So Aaron, I'm obviously friends with, we're all friends with Aaron. He's a top bloke. And I'd done some stuff for Little Heroes. And he said, how much can I pay you to do like a comic for kids in hospital? I said, well, you can't pay me anything because I'll do it for free sort of thing. And he said, well, I'm thinking about doing like an activity book where, you know, they can, we can almost get them to learn how to make a comic page and stuff like that. And it sort of changed slightly into what we've got now. So it's sort of, I wrote a script and we back and forth a bit on it. And then I did. Did Aaron approach you? Do you know what? We talk so much on our WhatsApp group. I lose track of what actually happened.
Absolutely.
Did Aaron then approach you? I can't remember how that bit came about.
So what I think happened was I wasn't friends with Aaron on Facebook. I had met him because I met him back at Troops in February. We went out for a meal before. And remember, we were all around that table?
Yeah.
That was the first time I even heard of him. So just talking to him then. But I think he must have spoke to Susie Gander. Because he wanted a design for the robot character. And I every so often I'll draw robots and I'm a bit addicted to drawing robots. And I put one on Facebook And Susie tagged Aaron in to the picture and said something like, well, what about this guy? And within an hour, he'd messaged me to say, introduced himself and said he was, would I be interested in doing a design for this character for a comic book? So I said, no, absolutely, of course. But just to let you know, I've never done a comic before. Nothing to this scale anyway.
Yeah.
So I did it, and I had a couple of days spare, so I came up with this little character thing and sent it to him, and he seemed to like it. And then the next thing, I think, was he asked if he could see my idea of a page, the sort of the first page. So I was given the first couple of pages of the script. So I did the page, penciled out the page, sent it to him, and that was it.
Nice.
There you go.
So, yeah, then the rest is history.
And we just sort of sucked you in from there and wouldn't let go of you.
You certainly sucked. Yeah, you certainly sucked to me. Absolutely.
So this is like your third kids comic you've written this year, Tony. Is that right?
What's wrong with me? I'll start losing my reputation with this show.
Yeah, you're going against the grain, isn't it? It's like people know what you like on this show, and then there's the real Tony.
I guess you have to counterbalance the Cockney Kung Fu stuff.
Yeah.
And the blog stuff.
Just said. You know, yeah. I had to counterbalance it somewhere, didn't I?
The one which readers seem to gravitate towards when they come round to look at the comic on the table.
Yeah. There is a few Easter eggs in this comic, but that isn't one of them, I promise.
Did you want to talk a bit to your process, mate? Because these are, I mean, go to the Kickstarter and have a look, but these are fucking amazing pages. Yeah, we are blown. You. Yeah, I know about twice a day, because he's a machine, Andy goes, oh, there's a new comic, there's a new page in the Dropbox, and I'm straight on it, you know, to have a look at it. All great stuff. So how did you work it?
So, I mean, yeah, he was saying that, I mean, because, as I said, this is quite new to me, really, as the actual comic strip, and because I'm working with a client, it's one of those things that I want, when they got me on board, I said, well, I will be drowning you with stuff. I will be sending you stuff to look at as it's being done, because... Yeah. Isn't that more heartbreaking than spending, I don't know, weeks and weeks on something, sending it to them, and then them coming back and saying, actually, you know what, that isn't what we wanted at all. So I almost wanted them to handhold me through it. So constantly we're on WhatsApp, and constantly I'm sending it through. But yeah, I spoke to Aaron about it, and it was like, well, tell you what, how about I go through the whole comic and I do all the pencils first, rough pencils, so I can pencil out the whole comic, and then... hopefully get that signed off, make any changes that we need to, and then I can start the big painting process. I wanted to do it in my... I go to conventions with my store, my I Am Zoot store, and yeah. I sell these digital art prints. But I wouldn't really say they're overly cartoony, not really. I'm really into, you know, quite heavily painted and processed, all digital painted. And I wanted it like that. I didn't want to go... you know, cell shaded or anything like that, real traditional. Mm. I wanted to see if I could do it, because it takes, I mean, it's very labor intensive, but I wanted to see if I could do a whole comic like in this style. And yeah, I've had to adapt it a little bit. You know, you have to, you know, playing a lot with, you know, I've done more white outlines than black outlines, if that makes sense.
Right. Okay.
I think kind of works, really. But no, I mean, it's been a bit of a learning curve. The one thing I hadn't really worked with before are speech bubbles. And I got a friend of mine, Craig, who he does a digital comic, a web comic, sorry. And he said to me straight away, right, get your speech bubbles in first. And I'm like, nah, don't be silly. And they'll come in later. Don't worry, I'll find room for them. Yeah, you need them in early, don't you? Now and then, you know. You do. That's so important. Do you know what I mean? You've got to work your page around them and all that. But yeah, that's it. As I said, it's been a learning. Each, you know, I've been tackling each panel as it comes, really, and I'm trying not to think too much, too far ahead. And well, I started in May. I started this project in May, and I've just finished now. I've just finished page 13 of a 16-page story. So we're getting there, I think. Yeah, it's been great. Actually.
I actually think we're ahead of schedule, because we're looking at a February release, aren't we, for it? But I think, yeah. I get the feeling we'll be... There's a proof copy floating about as well. Have you had yours come through, have you?
I have. On the paper stock. Yeah, I've got... Actually, it's next to me now, actually. Because it's got to be... We've had to be a bit careful with the paper that we chose to get a print on, because the paper's got to scribble on it.
Yeah, they do have to scribble on it, and like coloured pens and things like that, haven't they?
So we're going to, I think, obviously it can't be glossy or anything like that. So I think we're still going to go for a glossy cover, I believe. You know, I have to talk to Aaron. Aaron's the boss. He's dealing with all that. But he sent me that through. And as I said, there's a, I believe you guys have seen the digital rough copy as well hanging around.
Yes. But
as I said, we are ahead of schedule. But in my, I've kind of written down that I want to get all of the inks, the paints done by the end of November, so that then I can maybe have a couple of days off and then with fresh eyes go all the way through it again and just tweak. Because I mean, I know you guys would be the same. You can't go through your own stuff without finding so many little problems, mistakes of it. Do you know what I mean? And you just want to go all the way through it and tweaking it up and just tidying bits up. And oh, we're going to redo all the speech bubbles for a start and that kind of thing, really.
It's a psychological trick you play on yourself that you know you can actually do it. But there's some, for example, if I publish an article online, I press publish and then I go back and reread it because I know I'll only then spot the mistakes.
Yeah,
of course. Yeah.
It's a weird one, isn't it? Yeah.
I mean, as artists, you do become blind to your own work. I am absolutely certain for that is an actual thing. I think it's because you don't see your work anymore. If you're working for goddamn how many hours on it, you don't see it, do you?
Just
almost becomes a blur. Do you know what I mean? And then you've got to go step away. You've got to have a fresh pair of eyes, come back a few days later, and then you'll spot a load of shit.
Yeah.
I think it's that thing of, there's this thing I was watching about road users and how your brain fills in gaps. And I think that when you look at it long enough, your brain just kind of like just fills in and sees what you think you should be seeing, not actually really for what it is. So that break is, paramount. You come back,
It's like, you know that artist trick about holding your work up at the mirror? Because then you're seeing it completely different. That really works. Mm-hmm. It's quite heartbreaking, actually, because you can think, actually, if this doesn't look too bad, look it up in the mirror and you realise that the whole face is slanted and whatever.
Yeah.
But I've done that recently
with a face, and it's like, oh, that doesn't look too bad. And then I flipped it, and then it's like, fucking, it looks like he's deformed.
Yeah, all the time, mate. That happens all the time.
And you can't really, you got to really be on form with faces because you need that sign of symmetricality. Otherwise, people really kind of.
It's quite interesting going on about the mirror thing and getting the faces right, because if you're showing somebody else who hasn't seen the drawing for the first time, and do they see what you are looking at in the mirror? So if you're up in the mirror and you realise that half of the face is sliding off or something. Then does somebody who's never seen that page before, is that what they instantly see? Do they instantly see it and think that half the side is the face is all caved in? I've wondered that.
I presume they do.
Yeah.
I presume they see the fault because you're not seeing the fault. But then
as
artists, like you said, you're very critical of your stuff and you think, well, that's wrong, that's wrong. And someone else will look at it and think, that's fine.
But I think
we
need
look
to.
At
I think
so quickly, cool. don't we?
Yeah,
you do. Yeah, you consume it. It goes in and out. Do you know what I mean? But I think that's important. It's important as an artist to see your faults. I think that is so important.
Yeah. It's kind of soul-crushing with comics, as in it can be consumed so quickly.
Yeah.
That's what, like, sort of, if I was Jeff Darrow, I'd have fucking done myself in years ago. Like, you get one panel and it's consumed in seconds, and it's like, that's obviously, like, days and days and days of work.
Exactly.
But obviously, the how-to-make book is a completely different beast as well, though, isn't it? Because it's not just pick it up, consumed, and then put down. You have it's a book with a purpose. It's obviously, you know, for kids.
Yeah, we want
to
kids
involved.
To spend time on it, mate. Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, they've got to spend time. Yeah.
Yeah, so how did you go about thinking, like, the activities? Because it's an activity book as well, isn't it? So how did you plan the activities for the kids to do?
I think it was mostly by me. It was the pacing. So I wanted a couple of pages just of normal story, and then we would add a drawing page. So it sucks the kid in to following the story, and thus makes it more interesting for them to colour in or draw a robot or a monster or stuff like that. So we had to lay the groundwork. And because we only had a sort of shorter time than you would get in a normal narrative, we had to make the characters more iconic. So they had to be almost stereotypical, you know. So you've got the stereotypical, but although he's also a robot, you've got the stereotypical
superhero character who's a sort of typical broad-shouldered, you know,
big-chinned kind of, yeah.
Yeah. And then the kids are sort of your typical at school, super enthusiastic, let's go punch some monsters, you know, kind of kids as well. So we had to shortcut some stuff just to make it, just to break the pacing up. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I think that actually took the pressure off me a little bit, because to actually someone to come up to you and say, we all need to design these characters and they've got to be cliches, they've got to be stereotypical. It's like, brilliant, all right, superheroes gonna have a cape.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it absolutely takes the pressure off. But as the pacing goes, I think Tony absolutely nailed it, because it works so well. The way that it's laid out now is literally page one would be story, page two would be activity, page three story, page four activity. But it doesn't seem like that. There's no proper... It just flows so well. And nothing seems jammed in. Nothing seems forced upon, in my opinion. Do you know, it works. I think the writing works so well on it.
And we've got a couple of extra bits at the end. Are we allowed to say you're doing a sort of bit of a fill in the origin page, which made me chuckle?
Yeah. You guys kind of left that on my own devices, actually, because it was like, we've got four pages to fill out. So I was like, all right, well, I've been doing some research and I have a few ideas for some. But originally, we thought about it, and there was the whole idea of maybe, you know, the old cliche having a word search in or a maze. But then I thought, well, actually, no, the comic is called How to Make Comic. Let's make it more that kind of activity. Mm. So, yeah, there was one page. I think it might be going up on the Kickstarter page, so I think we can talk about it. We are thinking of perhaps, we've got a picture of you've got to come up with the main character, which is General Punchy. You've got to come up with his origin story. So it would be basically, it's a picture of him as a baby kind of thing, you know, and you've got to, what has he found, you know, and that, is it a radioactive spider, you know, is it gamma rays or whatever?
If anyone draws any sort of pearls dropping to the floor, I'm going to go around and punch that child in the face.
That was the other idea I had, you know. Why don't you draw General Punch's parents being brutally murdered, you know?
So, like, in the book, you sort of handhold the kid to make a comic through the activity book. Does it start relatively simple and then ramp up to the end where they have to do more and more? And if so, how was that process?
Oh, it's easy for me because it's just me writing for it does a bit, but there's some... They've got to design a sort of robot and some costumes, and then there is a bigger scene, isn't there, Andy, which is but it's just for kids to go a bit mad on, really, more than you know what I mean. It's sort of like a bigger space almost, you know.
There's a double page splash page in there, and it's mainly just a color it in, because we realized we hadn't actually done just a color in page, so it's really just a color in page. But I think, because, for instance, originally it was just going to be a big explosion, but it's like, well, there's no fun in drawing flames and smoke, so it was great fun just coming up with weird and bizarre things in this explosion, like the rubble, you know. So there's some real, real random shit in there. and that's been quite good. That's the one thing I really enjoyed doing, because, as I said, kids have really got to hopefully spend time with this coming and go through it, you know. So I just wanted there to be some real random stuff going on in this comic, you know. And it does pay off at the end as well. There is a reason behind all these random things that you see.
Yeah, there's a bit of an Easter egg thing going on, which is all Andy, I have to say, because one of my favourite pages is, and you can see this on the Kickstarter pages, Springworth is talking to the reader, and he walks past a sort of a line of pictures of, like, paintings of superheroes, because there's a lot of superheroes in their world.
Mm.
And one of them is a superhero who delivers toilet paper to people who've run out of toilet paper.
That's the hero we need.
Yeah, exactly. But there's also little Easter eggs in there. You can go through and count them, and it's fun for kids to go back and look at the pages and spot stuff. And
that's
the plan. Yeah,
I think it was important just to fill it up. So it's maybe it'd be a case of every time you open it and you go through it, you see something a bit different. You know, it's good fun. I really enjoyed doing it.
I mean, you're starting off strong as well. I mean, you can quite easily expand, like, these activity books as well, can't you? You know, with all kinds of things that kids love doing, whether it be colouring in pages, you know, obviously they're sketching characters, you can have word searches, you can do anything, isn't it? Because the goal is to just get kids involved and, like,
yeah, I think so. And there's nothing to stop, like, the parents, or if you're with kids at an event, you know, like True Believers or something, is the kids can take it to, say, you or Dan or Andy and say, oh, can you draw me a robot in that space? You know, there's all this sort of thing that can be done with it. That's the idea. Yeah,
that'd be 20 quid, please.
Yeah.
15th cash.
Yeah.
So hopefully, if the book does well enough, then there could well be a sequel of sorts.
It could very well be.
Hopefully. It's been a really fun sort of experiment to try. Yeah, it took some figuring out, and now I can just step back and watch Andy get all the grief now.
I'll take the shit for this.
But it looks amazing, Andy's. Yeah. I mean, I've run out of adjectives to say about Andy's work, but yeah. Bear in mind, this is his first comic.
I was going to say, Andy, this is your first comic, but also it's an unconventional first thing to try, isn't it? Rather than a short, what made you sort of think, yes, this is the one I want to use as the first comic?
I think it's because it's unconventional, actually, to be honest. Mm. When I was approached with it, that as soon as it was mentioned, it was a comic, it was like, no, I can't do a comic. I've never done a comic. Can't do that. But I thought, you know what? We'll have a go. Something I've always wanted to do is illustrate a children's book. I'm not, this is probably blasphemy on this podcast, but I'm not a massive, massive comic reader. I'm much more interested.
And that was Andy. Thanks, everyone.
So I'll be off. I'll see you guys later. Yeah. But yeah, come to the True Believers event, but I help kind of, you know. But I thought, so it would be more like, it is a comic book in the sense that you've got, you know, you've got your panels and you've got speech bubbles. But the way that I wanted to approach it wasn't like your appropriate, like a comic book. You know, I wanted to do it the way that I wanted to do it. I didn't want to almost emulate like a different style.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's kind of how I did it. And I did this, I told Aaron beforehand, I said, this is what I want to do. This is the style I do. This is how I want to do it. I don't want it to be, you know, I don't want to have to change my style. I want to do it like this style I'm comfortable in. And he said, yeah, go for it. So that's it really. I'm happy how it's turning out so far.
Cool.
It could all go wrong, because it's not finished yet.
It really came to reality. I mean, I thought this is really happening when Aaron sent us that video of him looking through the proof, and I thought, fucking hell, it's getting close now.
I know. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it's like the shit's just got real.
Yeah. But I think the proof in the pudding will be when the kids are using it, aren't they? You know, when you.
Yeah,
because obviously Little Heroes, they do a brilliant job in all their work of, like,
yeah, they really do.
They take pictures of the kids actually using the kits and stuff, and when you see those sort of photos in the back of their comics or whatever it is, you just think, well, that's it. That's worth any price of admission, isn't it? Just seeing that.
Is there an idea to tie it in with an event at True Believers to get kids making comics or using the book?
This is definitely something that we've. I don't know if you know this, Tony. This is something actually that we've been speaking to. Stuart does want a few panels and workshops going on at the event as usual, and I did put my hand up and say, "Well, tell you what, I'd like to do an event. I'd like to do a panel, and perhaps share it with Aaron." And I'd know, maybe get them to get the kids designing robots or something like that. We don't quite know what we're going to do yet. Yeah, but yes, there is definitely going to be some kind of crossover, some kind of event at True Believers that involves this project. Yeah, I think so.
Nice one.
I mean, just to see like sort of workshops or something like that, you know, it's tailor-made.
Yeah.
For things like that, isn't it? Well, when you actually get the book, I mean, the Little Heroes sort of kits come with like pens and stuff. Is it just the book that you get on this one? Or do you know if there's.
We're getting some colouring in pens and stuff with it, aren't we? Is that right?
Yeah, there was talk about, it was mentioned that there's going to be some, you know, pencils like the old Beano and Dandy days. You know, there will be something stuck on the front. You know, not like a Highland Toffee bar or a Wham bar or something, but, you know, some
Highland Toffee. Gee, that's old school.
That's amazing. back in the day. But I think he's also the kits that because they send out these boxes, don't they, to the hospitals. And I believe eventually this comic will end up in that box.
Yeah, that's the plan, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah, that's the plan. I mean, to be fair, it's an A4 magazine size comic that's only £3.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's pretty good, really. Yeah, parents can get their own colouring pens.
Yeah. So
it's going to be a proper glossy as well, isn't it? I mean, the covers are going to be, it's going to be a proper glossy print as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, when it's all said and done, it's going to be a brilliant project anyway. And I know I can speak for Dan when I say we've loved seeing the work in progress so
thanks,
far.
Man. Thank you.
It seems to have kind of gone from 0 to 60. Like, yeah. 1 minute you're talking about, next minute there's a proof.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was blown away.
Yeah. And I will say, the first time that I saw the work in progress at the Troubs summer variant, and I just read through some of the pages, I looked at Tony and thought, bloody hell, he can tone it down.
Well, yeah. Screaming at you some abuse, as we normally do behind our table. Yeah.
I'll tell you what, that was scary at the Troubs event, because it was the first time that both me, Aaron and Tony were in the same room since this project started. So I'd done some the black and white printouts, some ashcans, I believe, Tony called them. I'd never heard that phrase before, ashcan, but there you go. So I'd done some printouts, I was at the end of the pencil stage at that point. So I gave them out and said, right, I want you to go through, get the red pen out. I want you to, tear it apart. And of course, I was working the event. I was, I had my orange shirt on and I was, making sure the event was going okay. And at one point, I was wandering around one of the halls and I saw Aaron next to Robin Lorenzo. And they had it in front of him and they were going through it. And I shat myself, I'll be honest with you. Yeah. It's like, oh my god, what's he got that for? So I did a flyby and hovered over them to see if I can catch any swear words or slagging off, just to but they were brilliant, absolutely fantastic. It was some really good pointers, didn't they?
Weren't they? Yeah,
they both
so
did.
That's the Etheringtons, yeah. So they
the Etherington it, brothers, yeah.
Yeah.
The absolute big daddies of it.
No, I mean, it's definitely a brilliant project, and like any of our listeners out there, if you're not aware of it, there'll be a link in the show notes to find out more and pledge to Kickstarter, because it is for a fantastic cause anyway.
Shall I give the pledge levels just quickly?
Go for it.
So it's How to Make Comics with Springworth on Kickstarter. £1, you can pledge £1, gets you a digital copy. £3 gets you a physical and a digital. £6 gets, as we talked before, digital and physical, and it donates a physical copy to a hospital. That, to me, is, let's start at that one. Let's start at £6. Mm-hmm. Fuck all in it. Yep. Two copies in it. And then the mighty £18, which is the top level pledge, is a physical and a digital copy, an A5 sketch by Mr. Hanks as well. So you're going to be busy, my friend. Nice. How many nine of them, I noticed already?
Already nine ten. Of them. Blimey.
Ten.
Ten. Ten. Good.
Is that got a cap, that one, or are you in trouble?
I don't think there's a cap on it even though.
Are you going to? I mean, with that in mind, I probably say the A5 sketch will be of, the main character. Do you know what I mean? Just keep it Springworth and just do loads.
I believe it will be a Springworth. Yeah, I think so.
He is cool.
Oh, he's awesome. Like,
you've got a little bit of an animated version of him as well somewhere, haven't we?
Yeah, and I'm not overly sure what we're doing with that, but it's really exciting.
Yeah, where he twiddles his moustache, and it's good. It's really good. Yeah.
So there you go, folks. And Jen, how did you feel about being asked questions, Tony?
I quite enjoyed it, actually.
Yeah? Yeah. Well, we will, of course, be shouting this project out as it goes on. You're going
to thanks for the support. You guys, because you both supported it really well. And it's only 24 hours, but you both were in.
I'm absolutely blown away from everyone, to be honest. It's been fantastic.
Yes. Yeah. And long may it continue. So there you go, listeners. Go and pledge. We know you're lovely out there, and you want comics to go in as many hands as possible. So yes, and.
We've actually had a couple of people just donate money as well, rather than pledge, because it's
that's nice.
Cause, yeah, that's
nice.
Yeah. That's really nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
Getting kids making comics. Can't
isn't
go
everyone nice? Yeah. This has just been a lovely segment, hasn't it? Hasn't it?
Like a satsuma.
I'm not used to it. It's really bizarre. It's not, the whole podcast and being nice to it. It's really weird. It's, no one's proved me wrong on any facts yet.
I did see Stuart posting an addendum from the last show of like what facts were right and wrong.
That was right, yeah. P.S. Yeah. I was right, Andy was wrong.
It's like that.
Well, is there anything you want to say to Stuart while you're on the record?
I'll be honest, he knows where I live, so I'm a bit worried to do that.
Well, we're looking forward to True Believers as well, man. Yeah. That's 2nd of February, isn't it?
Yeah. Second of February, absolutely. We've changed our venue. I better talk about it or else you'll have a go at me. We've changed our venue. We were at Cheltenham Racecourse for the last 4 years. We're still in Cheltenham, but we're at the Jurors Inn Hotel, which is, I'll be honest, a lot easier to get to. I think that's the 2nd of February. Is that the 2nd?
Yeah, it is.
And we will be launching our book there as well.
Excellent. And we'll be launching issue 4 of the Awesome Comics Anthology as well.
Of course, absolutely.
Big day. The final issue. It's going to be an epic day.
Spiritual home.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it is, isn't it? So you can get How to Make Comics and then pick up Awesome Comics and just see where it all goes wrong.
Yeah. Sort of the what to do and what not to do.
Absolutely, yeah.
Oh, dear. Well, Tony and Andy, thank you very much for talking with us.
Yeah,
no problem. Thank you very much for having me.
That was good, wasn't it?
Marvellous. Yeah. What did you think, Chris? Did you like it, Chris? It was amazing, wasn't it?
It was fantastic.
Yeah, when you said fart, that was so funny.
Oh.
Yeah, good. I don't know what's going on still. I don't know what's happening. We haven't done the interview yet, and it's confusing me.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
Okay. Good. Right.
But it will. You will have listened to it, people. So ignore what Tony's saying now. He's just having a bit of a mental breakdown.
I'm old. I'm 60 at the end of this month. I told you that before.
Yeah, but no. But you have the brain of a child.
I do.
As we all know.
And the sense of humour of a 14-year-old.
Yeah, you are a one-man in-betweener.
I'm like if the dude had joined the cast of the in-betweeners. That's kind of where I live in.
Oh dear.
I feel like the in-betweeners movie would benefit from being directed by the Coen brothers. Something in that.
The second one tapered off. They need a restart, don't they?
Yeah. Soft reboot.
Starts off like Fargo.
Yes.
Just with someone shooting them all, then we just carry on with the story. It's fine. They need to be put out of misery. That one, that bloke, the advert that bloke does with Kevin Bacon on
Don't get me started.
It's
on
worth
that.
Me throwing myself off a tall building for that one if I see it again.
Oh,
yeah.
Dear.
Anyway.
Rather than things that could bring you down, let's talk about some brilliant things for you to enjoy.
Bring you up.
Yes, it's the recommendations. Who wants to go first? Should we let our guests go?
Yes.
Yeah.
Chris? They don't have to be new things, do they? They're just things I've been reading.
Like. They can be whatever you want.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So I made a little list. So the thing that was keeping me like sane and happy while making Retrograde Orbit that I could just dip in and out of, I was reading Super Mutant Magic Academy by Gillian Tamaki.
Oh, okay, that's cool. Yeah,
which I think it's drawn in quarterly. I've done the collected edition, and it's her webcomic about a kind of, it's kind of like the X-Men school for like gifted teens, but so they're all kind of mutants or have weird powers, and they just go to school together, and it's a little bit witchy, and but it's just very dry. They're all like just tearing down authority figures, and they're really shitty to each other and funny to each other, and they're just great. I think they're just amazing characters. It's like Peanuts, but at a sci-fi school. It's like, it's so good.
She's a great creator, actually. I really like her stuff. Yeah
me too. Like,
and she puts out consistent stuff, doesn't she, all the time? Yeah.
Yeah, in my top 10 all-time faves, Gillian Tamaki is just amazing. And then a small press thing that I picked up at Thought Bubble that I really liked and is Isaac Lenkiewicz's Little Nettle. So Isaac's done, he does a lot of small press stuff. I think he's done a couple books with No Brow, he's illustrated, and then he's done some anthology stuff with them as well. But I just, like, I think it was a few years ago, Thought Bubble, he was sharing a table with some people. It's just, stuff's so good. Like, his line work's amazing. He's great
at
characters. funny, mischievous, like magical, amazing world building stuff. They always tend to be kind of a little bit folklore-y, and then kind of like this kind of element of whimsy to it, but they're quite kind of like mischievous and dark and funny. So yeah, Little Nettles Good is just about a gnome, young girl gnome, who's just a bit of a bit of a shit and pranks people and gets into trouble. I'm just like, yes, yes to all of this.
Oh, I saw this
magic
at Bristol,
from a witch.
I saw this at Bristol Zine Fair.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, proper bastard.
It's really funny, yeah. She's awful. Yeah. The worst. But he does other stuff as well. Like, there's another one that he's done about a comic about apple pie. I think it's called Apple Pie. And it's like an apple, like a little anthropomorphic apple whose best friend is like a Henry the Hoover. It's really weird. It's good. So lovely. I'm sold. I'm just like, as soon as I saw
like
the cover,
dream
I was like,
I had once. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a fever dream. You just think, this exists. It's manifest. Yeah. Oh, God. But yeah, and he's just incredibly talented creator. I want him to do like a graphic novel. Like, it'd just be so good. I'd be so ready for it. And then I've also finally got my hands on a copy of Cyber Realm by Ren McDonald.
Yes. Yeah.
So I think the first time I heard of him was when he did Sparks with Far Weather A's with No Brow, which is kind of like...
Hang on, Chris. You didn't buy that off me at Thought Bubble, did you?
No, I bought it at Travelling Man.
Oh, okay. Right.
But maybe I've got a doppelganger who has extremely good taste in comics.
Yeah. Yeah. Sparks is great as well. Sparks with a four for the A is really good. Yeah.
So they're both great. Like, is that kind of dystopian sci-fi?
Nuts as well.
They always remind me of like Akira, and like there's a real kind of manga vibe to it as well. And just in terms of like how the stories are structured, and I like Sparks because it's got a bit of kind of espionage and spy stuff to it. And Cyber Realm has got like dirty.
It was like sort of underground comics if they were mixed up with manga. It's almost that sort of feel to it, isn't there? You know, there's like an edgy, dangerous stuff to them, isn't there? You know, maybe to a certain extent.
Yeah. They're always really beautifully kind of coloured and printed. Similar, like I really rate the way he colours his comics as well. Just because I can tell there's a kind of Risa vibe to it. Which is totally kind of up my street, so I really like it as well. So aesthetically, I'm on board, but then in terms of the kind of gritty sci-fi edge to his stuff, I really like. So yeah, they're my recommendations.
Right,
awesome.
Good ones.
Amazing
ones.
Cool.
Yeah. V-Man, do you want to go next?
All right, my one is one from a couple of listeners who sent the book through, and this is a book that we've been aware of it being in progress for quite some time, and that is Ham Flask. One for Sorrow.
Yeah. I want to see this, actually. This looks amazing.
This is by Andrew Hutchinson, who's the writer, and Mark Robinson, who does the art. 60 pages, about then, full colour. Now, the synopsis is this. I'm going to try not to laugh through it. I've written notes for this, but I'm probably going to be laughing throughout this. Magic is out of control in the northeast of England, and the Dandelion King is to blame. But who is the Dandelion King? Magical investigator Reginald Hamflask aims to find out. With a little help from his estranged daughter Gina and an accident-prone vampire named Stephen. Now...
You know, all I'm thinking about now...
Sign me up.
All I'm thinking about is, why would you put ham in a flask?
Oh.
You can put anything in a flask. Don't just have to be tea. You can put beans in there, soup in there.
It's like the old... Yeah, it's like the old David Beckham joke goes, oh, you keep things hot and it keeps things cold. What have you got in there this week, David? And he says, I've got coffee and ice cream.
Oh, God.
But, from that synopsis of Ham Flask, you probably think, and I haven't read the whole thing, but from what I read there, it's kind of, we're dealing with a Constantine-like character. I'll just say, if that character resided in Royston Vasey or frequented Phoenix Knights, then maybe you'd have that sort of character, because Reginald Hamflask himself, he's basically a down and out tramp who lives in a van, eats pickled eggs, and is an absolute waste of a human being, and he is an absolute legend.
You like pickled eggs, don't you?
I hate pickled eggs. I hate them.
I threw a pickled egg at a bus once.
What? Yeah, why did you do that, Tony?
Well, we all decided drunkenly that we're going to eat pickled eggs, and because we never had them, and they all bit into them, and they all tasted a bit like fish. They're horrible.
Ooh. So I've never had one.
No, they're horrible. I wouldn't recommend them. So we all threw them at a bus. And I remember these people on the bus laughing because these pickled eggs hit the bus and just sort of bounced off. And as they bounced off, I thought, I was going to put that in my stomach. That looked horrible.
Do you think the people on the bus could tell from the inside that the projectile was pickled or just a boiled egg? Like, yeah, do you think they could discern?
Yeah.
Like, do you think there was a smell or
a connoisseur on board who
was Well, but the thing is, a pickled egg is still a boiled egg. It's just been put in pickling juice, isn't it?
Yeah, there must be some subtle difference.
Yeah,
I'd
sort of squelchy. Yeah, I needed something for the mailer this week, actually, Chris. So I might use that.
So now 2,000 words about pickled eggs on a bus. You're like a chimp.
Yeah, eggs first, then
that's all you got for me this week. You're like a chimp. That's it, isn't it?
Yeah.
I happen to like chimps, so fuck you.
Yeah.
Do you like chimps, Chris? We like them. They're cool.
No strong feelings either way.
I mean, she wouldn't like it if one of them lobbed a pickled egg at her.
Yeah, I wouldn't like to be surprised by a chimp, but I wouldn't like to be surprised by a
chimp. Who wants to be surprised by a chimp?
Depends how you would be surprised. Yeah. If one turned up saying happy birthday, it'd be a nice surprise, wouldn't it? But if it just jumped out of a bush, it wouldn't be so nice.
Just screaming.
Yeah. The ambush is not great. No one likes first impression.
Yeah, no one likes a chimp ambush. So, there's so many possibilities for episode titles this week. Yes, but back to Ham Flask. I can't believe that's one hell of a detour. But the story basically starts with a classic pre-credit scene of someone sort of reciting some sort of ancient dark text, which of course goes badly for them. A stand-up setup in some ways, but as I was reading it, when the said bad thing happened, a goblin-like creature exclaims the words "fucking mint" before flying off into the night, crying out "wee."
That's a very northern thing to say, mint, isn't it? They like that, don't they?
Yeah, it was the first. It was the first of many laugh out loud moments, and I knew from that then that this book was special. So, and from there we meet Gina, who's Reginald's daughter, who, after losing her job, flattened pretty much at her lowest point, she has to meet up with her dad once again to investigate a case of spontaneous combustion, as you do. And so the adventure begins, and so we meet lots of weird characters from the magic circle, who convene in a grotty social club next to a place called this made me laugh, Abra Kebabra. Yes.
There's got to be somewhere like that, isn't it?
That's a legit place, and there must be Abracababra in Huddersfield. We've got a fish shop called the Codfather. Come on.
Yes, come on. We used to have a second hand shop in Peckham called Junk and Disorderly, and I thought that was good.
So good.
So good. Yeah. I love a play on words.
Yeah.
You do, don't you?
Amazing.
He does love it.
So that was already genius. There's so many pages that made me laugh out loud. But there's also a vampire, like it says there, called Stephen, whose only word is blah. And he does get a monologue at some point. Bear that in mind.
Oh, no. It sounds so good.
There's a pond-dwelling mer-creature who eats cats. A mud golem that someone tries to fight in a handmade armour made of bagels. I know I actually sound like I'm having an episode right now, but trust me, this is all in this book, and it's amazing. Even like the Dandelion King gets laughs, because you see one scene, there's one moment when he sort of draws his own blood to bring forth a monster, but he kind of he cuts too deep, and as the cut begins pissing blood, he says, "Oh Christ, I overdid it a bit," which you don't normally hear from your villains. I must say that the script by Hutchinson is laugh a minute, especially like the jokes mainly come from like characters themselves. So, you know, there's a few sort of like, you know, visual, you know, sort of over the top sort of visual gags. Like Stephen turns into, like when he turns into a bat, it's like a bat body with a Nosferatu like head on it, which made me laugh. But a lot of it is from the character interaction, and Mark's artworks is just absolutely pitch perfect. Now, I've been a fan of Mark's work for a while now, and like he even did a bit of fan art for our comics anthology.
He did Peggy the Prostitute, didn't he?
Yeah,
he did Babs the Receptionist, didn't he? In the fan art,
And he's an awesome artist, and like I know he's been posting like sort of work in progress of this one for quite some time.
I follow him on Instagram. He's a great cat. He's a great person to follow online. I think, because he puts some hilarious stuff out. Yeah.
So seeing the finished product is just awesome, and there's a great sense of comedic timing, design, and motion that I think works brilliantly. Also, this isn't a dingy comic. There's colour sort of on every page. It just gives it like a greater sense of fun. It feels like these two have been mates for years. Do you know what I mean? It feels like they've been working on the same level. They've created a character and universe that's just begging to be explored. And if you like things like The League of Gentlemen, I'd probably say The Work of Terry Pratchett or What We Do in the Shadows or things like that, then you'll absolutely love this.
I would love it. Yes. It sounds awesome.
Yeah. I mean, it's for mature readers. There's some fruity language going on.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a goblin says fucking mint within the first four pages.
Yeah. So this is what we got, Chris, is we've got like a little, we share the Twitter account, and people occasionally say, oh, would you like to read my comic? And it's like a race for some of us, not for every comic, I might add, but it's a race for us to go, oh, yeah, I'll get that. And yeah. I know you got in before me on that one. I was like, ah, I really want to see that one.
Yeah. I've been waiting for this for ages. But it's a wonderful sort of character moment. It's like Reg is driving along. He's smoking a cigarette in his van next to his daughter. And it goes, does it bother you? And she goes, yes, it bothers me. And he goes, I meant the smoke. Oh, no, it doesn't bother me. You kill yourself however you want. Death by 1,000 silk cuts doesn't sound like a bad way to go. Better than spontaneous combustion by the dog shit bin. I've rarely seen dog shit bin written in a comic.
It's
a really underrated location.
It's a quality book, and I think a lot of our listeners will absolutely love it. Not only that, it has the greatest, and I mean this in every sense of the word, pull quotes I've ever seen on a book.
Oh Christ, what does it say?
There's four of them. I've read thousands of comic books, and after reading Ham Flask, I can definitely say that this is one of them.
Right.
Horatio Shagnasty said that one.
Oh, he lives up the road from me.
Yeah. It's got everything you want from a comic book. A cover, pages, pictures. That's from Terry Tonka Toy. No, I don't think it's a good idea for me to endorse this. That's from Uther Penwing. And the last one, what's a ham flask? Your mum.
Oh,
mum.
You see?
Your mum.
Your mum. We don't say your mum enough, do we?
Yeah.
It needs to be said more, I think.
No, you can't say it in this day and age. It's terrible, isn't it?
Can't you?
It's a lost art. Lost art. But also on the back, it does say they're an award-winning artist and writer duo. And the footnote says, awards include School Attendance Award, 1999, and Junior Swimming Certificate, 15 metres.
15 metres, eh, Pa? What's wrong with you?
You can float that. So follow them at Andy Hutch Writes and at Little Mark Art, and just find out where they did launch this at Thought Bubble, but it's a really nice printed book as well. It's really
good. Fucking hell, I didn't get a chance to walk 10 yards from my table at Thought Bubble.
So I hope they did well at Thought Bubble, and I hope a lot of our listeners check out their work. So it's great stuff.
Buy that. That's good.
That's
really
my
good
one. What's yours, Sam?
Mine's a bit of nostalgia, actually, changing tack a little bit. I found mine online. I got followed by a company called Sit Comics. Have you guys seen them yet?
Mm-mm.
No, they're an American comic company. Interestingly, they are Darren Henry, who's the writer of what I'm about to talk about. He used to be a writer on Seinfeld, My Family, and also, strangely enough, Big Finish, and I think Futurama as well. And he started a sort of comic company. And they've got a real sort of old school feel to what they're doing. This comic is called The Blue Baron. It's written by Darren Henry. It's art by, get these names, Ron Friends did the art, right? And Sal Buscema did the inks. How cool is that?
Bloody hell.
Yeah, I love Ron Friends and Sal Buscema. For those that read Spider Girl back in the sort of late 90s, early 2000s, it was just this sort of great sort of soap opera superhero story with consistent art and everything like that. And I really sort of miss those days of stories like this. And this is I sent this to Gareth Hopkins actually, and
he said this is the perfect all-ages comic, and he was going to show it to his son to have a read of it. And I make him right on that, and it's got that sort of Spider-Man vibe to it. It starts weirdly, this is not consistent with the rest of the comic, but it starts in 1776 in Pennsylvania, and the Redcoats are torturing someone for information, and in bursts this superhero called the Blue Baron, who's dressed up as a sort of period specific, you know, with a white wig and a wide brimmed peaked hat and, you know, a long breeches and all this sort of thing, and he's the superhero of the time, and you think, oh, okay, well, that's cool. And then it flashes forward to that typical sort of Peter Parker cafeteria at school scene, you know, where all the nerds are sitting together and they're talking about something they've seen on last night's TV, and they begin to get bullied, yeah, by a couple of the sort of trashy kids in the school. And then it turns out what they're talking about is this superhero team that contains this character, Blue Baron. And he's in a superhero team with other characters called Startup. She's a character, she's got her own comic out, she's well part of this run. The Bull, Protege, and the Raider. And they're talking about this fight that's taken place. And as is typical with all these things, and it's a cliche, and it does know it's a cliche, and it does give a little nod. They go to this laboratory where they've been shown around on a school trip, just as the Blue Baron crashes through a roof into one of the sort of experiments. And in the experiment, they're doing something sort of with cosmic power or something, and he swaps identities with one of the kids, and the kid becomes the Blue Baron, and the Blue Baron becomes the kid at the school, and all that is entailed with someone who talks like he's from the 1776 and stuff like that. And it's just this sort of great fun comic. This kid Ernie then has to sort of cope with being a superhero. There's 5 issues out so far on it. The first issue, if you go to sitcomics.net, you can get the first issue for free and just download it for free. I think I messaged you about it in the week.
Yeah,
and all their first issues are free, and then their usual £1.49 on Comixology after that. But they're like good comics, sort of from the around the Bronze Age into the sort of modern age sort of period. Loads of panels on a page, great story. You can pick up an issue and read it without worrying about some crossover or where the rest of it's going or any of this other sort of stuff. 22 pages, they're full color, just sort of fun. It's like a body swap, vice versa, or you know, that sort of thing going on. But it's just sort of fun comics. It's like, reminded me of like why we loved Spider-Man and why we loved Nova and all these sort of characters, and I just really, really enjoyed it. Sal Buscema, obviously, you know, you can't go wrong with him. He's just the most consistent artist ever for me. He's just, everything he does is just like supremely readable, you know. And he's not a youngster anymore. No. And I know him and Ron Friends have been mates for years and sort of collaborated for years, and everything. He's got this sort of lovely clean line and lovely action, and you know, I think they're going to collect it once. I think they're doing 5 or 6 issues, and then they're going to collect it into one sort of big collection. But if you go to sitcomics.net or follow them at sitcomics on Twitter, you can just see what they've got going on. They're building this like little universe of just sort of all ages fun comics that you could quite happily hand to your kid and read, and you would enjoy as well, which is for me the what an all ages has got to be. It's not a kid's comic, an all ages comic. It's got something that, you know, everyone can enjoy, and that's what these are.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, really good stuff. Yeah, really enjoyed it.
Oh, that's one to keep an eye out for then.
Yeah, and nice and free. All the first issues are free, which is really good. You know, I really like it when they do that.
Nice and free. Yeah. Like this show.
Here we go.
Free and ever. What do you mean, here we go? Nice and free, and hopefully enjoyable. And we hope you lovely people out there enjoyed this week's show. And if you want to ask us about anything you've heard on this week's show, you can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. If you do the Twitter, go on there and follow us at The Awesome Pod, where we'll be announcing future guests. We've got some cracking guests coming up.
We've got big news. Not that today wasn't an absolutely joyous occasion, Chris, and we've loved having you on, but we've got a sort of a big name in the industry who you might be interesting to listen to as well, I think, actually. We booked her a couple of nights ago, so watch this space. Yeah,
We've always got something on the go, haven't we?
We have.
There's always something bubbling away. And if you do the Book of Faces, yes, facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And if you do group talk on Facebook as well, if that's your thing, then join the group Awesome Comics Talk. There's no hard selling or anything there. It's just people that just want to talk about the medium or shows or just anything in general. There's always fantastic conversation from loads of different creators, listeners, comic fans, whatever.
Yeah.
It's actually the only thing I read on Facebook, actually.
Yeah, me pretty much. Yeah, there's loads of good stuff going on there, isn't there?
Yeah.
I missed the Comic Mart today, I have to say. There's a few posts about that going on.
Did Did you feel sad? Did you shed a
tear?
I did.
A little bit. Yeah.
Oh, never mind. Grow up. I'm only joking. I
wish Dan was here.
He is in spirit.
He is. Yes. Yeah.
And if you miss Dan Butcher, then you can hear him on our other episodes, which you can find on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. Do you like that? That's
too very smooth. Yeah, that was smooth again. Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks. Like Luther Vandross. That's how smooth. Yeah. What? See, if I could be bothered to edit, I'd probably edit in a Luther Vandross song in the background, but I can't be bothered to do all that.
Christ, yeah. Please don't.
Although that might mean that someone would leave us a review on iTunes, which you can do.
Oh, yeah, good point.
Leave us a review, subscribe, and it helps get the word out about the show. And also on Spotify, thank you if you listened on there. I need to send you guys the actual sort of stats for Spotify, don't I? They're quite.
Oh, that'd be cool. Yeah, I'd like to see that. Yeah, that's the where all people go, isn't it?
See, it's the trending. Have you ever trended before, Tony?
I don't even know what it means.
Don't do it too much, you go blind. You can also find us on other networks like Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife. What other networks are we on, Tony?
Well, interesting. I was thinking about this because I like to say, and I was watching the movie series, rewatching some of the movie series Sharknado. Earlier, obviously a classic. Have you seen Sharknado, Chris?
I haven't seen it.
I think you'd enjoy it.
You probably enjoy eating a pickled egg more.
Yeah, and I've decided that there's why hasn't there been a parody of Sharknado called Sharknado? So I thought I'd go with Odd Sharknado.
Oh my god! Why did you always do this?
You encourage me. You know you do.
I try to keep this show legit.
I feel like a Sharknado is something that you have after you've had, like, a pickled egg appetizer followed by a pot noodle main. It's the Sharknado dessert.
It's like Pavlovian with Vince. Watch out. It'll be like...
Don't put me off Pavlova.
Pot noodle. Oh, pot noodle now. Mm. I've got a friend called Noodles. I've told you that, haven't I?
Yes. He's lying.
Cool nickname, though,
he doesn't have a friend.
I made that nickname up.
Yeah. So it's going off the cliff fast. So we better sign off. Thank you for joining us this week, Chris. It's been absolutely awesome. You've been an absolute star.
It's been a lovely pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Yes. So and yes, of course, go online, find all her work, and buy loads of her amazing prints and books. With all the links will be in the show notes. And
thank you.
Yeah, spend your money. There you go. So thank you for listening, folks. Go forth and read loads of comic books. And from Christina, Tony, and myself, have a great week. A Greek week. I almost said a Greek
have
week.
Or a Turkish week.
Well, you can have, just whatever week you're going to have, just have it well. And as always, stay awesome. See ya.
Bye.
'Cause I can't remember what we're talking about, so I'm just
All I can remember is pot noodles.
Yeah, and now I'm thinking about Ukrainian food ever since you bloody mentioned it.
Sounds good. I thought I was on a Great British Bake Off then when I came back on.
But with less bread, more cabbage.
That's the name Ukrainian of this week's way. Episode.
Yeah.
Less bread, more cabbage.
Name of the episode.
Yeah.
Yay!
Yeah.